this cousin with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute past the hour, and we begin a brand spanking new, fresh week of conversation radio here on the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Horn, the Head On Radio Network, headonradionetwork.com. Conversation radio, independently and listener financed and produced. Radio unlike any other. And proudly so, I should say. We will be broadcasting all this week. Shouldn't be any particular hiccups, I don't believe. And that's a nice thing. Now, we do have a programming... We have a programming change or a programming interruption tomorrow evening, but it's the good kind. Tomorrow night from 7 p.m. until 9 p.m. Eastern Time, Eastern Standard Time, that is, we will have another in the continuing series of PRISM, P-R-I-S-M, West Virginia American History Chats. Hosted by our good friend Dr. Bill O'Brien and Professor Keith Lilly. Should be a dandy. They all are. And I encourage you to catch this particular PRISM West Virginia American History Chat, because it's going to be the last one for a while. We won't have another one until mid-February. There will be one in none in January, one in February, two in March and April, and I think one in May. So it'll be a while between PRISM chats here on the Horn. So make sure you tune in tomorrow. I personally will miss doing them because, I just get so doggone I get so doggone much out of them. So check it out tomorrow, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, only here on the Horn. And, of course, it's worth mentioning that, this is another neat thing about this is you can get this in video as well. Not just the audio stream, but, in fact, the video stream will be available at the Horn's Ustream channel. That's Ustream. TV. And by way of reminder, for those of you with smartphones and wireless internet, that kind of thing, it's also worth noting that all of the podcasts of this program go up on Stitcher Radio. You can get that app for either iPhone or Android phone. And there's a constantly available run of the podcast from whatever the most current program is. Anytime you want it, there at Stitcher. I've got it on my phone, and it was free. Pretty sure it's free. Yeah, it's free. So that's most of the housekeeping. A gentle reminder: we exist. On the kindness, or we continue to broadcast on the kindness of you who find value in what happens here at the Horn. There is a PayPal button. at headonradionetwork.com. And there's also a snail mail address. So however you choose to help out, it will be much appreciated. So that's just a mention, because given the size of the Horn audience, which is substantial, a very, very, very few people actually contribute, relatively speaking, to keep this all going. We are in a relatively new month. It's the fifth day of December. And all we seek from month to month is 250 contributors of $10 apiece. We like to call them the Thrifty 250. And that's what keeps the Horn on the air. And quite frankly, a lot of times, not nearly as many as that. We wound up November in a $570 hole. We wound up October in a hole. And that makes it harder to keep all the plates spinning in the air. So just to mention by way of a reminder that this doesn't happen miraculously or without the dedicated support of a number of people who think that it is worth it to keep all of this going. To keep all of this going for even those who are unable to contribute, and there are a sizable number of those people. So remember, when you contribute to the Horn, you're not just giving for yourself. You're also giving for those who would, if they could, but cannot. So enough of that. It's about 7 minutes past the hour, and it's Monday. And Monday means something. Every day means something special at the Horn. What am I saying? But Monday is in particular special because it is, and it seems to work out so nicely once you consider it. When you think about all the things that go down over the weekend, so many of them are absolute manifestations of pure lunacy, that it only makes sense that we would dub this day Moran Monday. And it is. This is Moran Monday on the Horn. Before we crank all of that up, a couple of trips to the mailbag, just because you guys pour a lot into what you send along for consideration. And one of the nice things is that conversation radio can take place not just in the telephone format, but in your emails as well. And such was the case. Friday, we closed out Friday on the front porch, or we began closing out the week on Friday, you may recall, with the remarks of our good buddy Scott in Sweden, who, because I have this propensity for talking about college football, had actually, by virtue of having to be sort of sedentary as the result of a bum knee, actually sat down and watched some of what the rest of the world calls gridiron. Sounds like something you have with waffles. But, the rest of the world owns football. And it's round, and people yell, "Goal!" But this is how things work out on the Horn. Our good buddy Dennis in Kentucky, with whom I frequently mow grass during the warm weather months, I'm on his MP3 player as he pushes the mower back and forth across the yard. Well, we went to Kroger's this weekend, Dennis and I. And Dennis was apparently touched by Scott's references to the just plain weirdness of watching a football game played by Texas A&M University, because they are weird. And so Dennis wrote me and said, in answer to Scott's question about cheerleaders and skimpy costumes, he said cheerleaders wear the skimpy outfits to make the fans root harder. Never cared for A&M, says Dennis, because I thought that it was cruel that when they caught a young man playing with himself, they would make him wear white gloves and stand at the football games. Now, there's some haiku level subtlety in that. Cheerleaders wear the skimpy outfits to make the fans root harder. Discuss. So, when fan mail comes in from one listener to another, I feel it only fair and proper and right and fitting that I send it along to the person who started it all, so I sent those remarks along to Scott in Sweden. So now we have a dialogue going between Kentucky and Sweden via West Virginia. Wow. Technology, huh? So Scott wrote back. He says, thank Dennis for that. But I don't see what's wrong about Aggies playing with themselves, and it must certainly be encouraged for the sake of all nearby mammals, both bipedal and quadrupedal. It's like what Arlo said about the big to-do over Reagan being asleep when U.S. warplanes bombed Libya in the 1980s. What's the problem, asked Arlo. The more he sleeps, the safer we are. Continue Scott, in my recent bout with the TV and gridiron, I did get enough caught up in the rankings to decide to give the Georgia versus LSU game a chance, seeing how despite Georgia being Georgia, LSU has already been declared the indisputable intergalactic, international, and more importantly, American master of the college football universe. It might be fun to see them stumble and choke. The choking was all mine, without the use of self-inflicted pretzels and discreetly unmentioned intoxicants, nor was any black eye incurred. You know what he's referring to, right? Yeah. Anywho, did you catch CBS's Orwellian intro to the game? And yes, and it was, and I think Scott captures it nicely when he says, Winston Smith must have been paid overtime to prepare that montage. It climaxed with what appeared to be a tunnel of fans, first Georgia's, then LSU's, with the camera rushing through it as if it were being carried by one of the team. Somewhere down each tunnel, about three people back on the right side, of course, the right side, is a wildly waving American flag, as if one of the fans is more interested in the nation's promotion than the team's. Really? But the next scene in the sequence began the chokehold. It showed some huge Georgia football player in full uniform dashing out of the tunnel like Braveheart leading the Briscots, his hands holding before him not a broadsword, or claymore, but an electronically placed American flag. The scene lasts no more than a few seconds, but one can be damn sure that no matter how realistic it looked, not a one of these three flags was actually in sight when the stock footage was shot. But it got much worse. The montage ends with an overhead shot of the LSU team rushing onto the field, huddling together, and like a cartoon figure producing an anvil out of a vest pocket, up whips an American flag from the center of the huddle, and it is frantically waved back and forth, around and around, as the music reaches its crescendo. At least Leni Riefenstahl had to get living actors to physically agree to tote the props. Here, CBS, one of the many divisions of the Ministry of Truth, uses state-of-the-art electronic imagery technology to cattle brand the American flag onto college football, as if this were needed. Really, Bob? This is puke-worthy TV. I searched the web in the morning to see if anybody else reacted to such flagrant Orwellian manipulation, but apparently few among those likely to watch the game would have noticed anything out of the ordinary. So keep an eye open for this in future montages. I am betting it's there, and the national championship game will have more inserted flags than a heroin den has needles. Signed, Scott, whose signature line, by the way, is appropriately as follows. The essence of propaganda consists in winning people over to an idea so sincerely, so vitally, that in the end they succumb to it utterly and can never escape from it. We don't have anything to give away here at the Horn, you know, tired old record albums, promotional versions that never went anywhere on the charts, or rubber bricks or toasters even. But we'll have a little contest this evening. The essence of... No fair cheating in using the interweb tubes. The essence of propaganda consists in winning people over to an idea so sincerely, so vitally, that in the end they succumb to it utterly and can never escape from it. Who done said it? Okay. We've got the first big belly laugh of the evening. Oddly enough, coming from, of all places, Australia. Robert writing in, Bob, LOL, cheerleaders wear skimpy uniforms to make the fans root harder. Root is an Australian slang term for, how do I say this, the act of physical union. And I think that's where Dennis was going. Only not quite. There's a slight difference. You probably get it. And then this email came in based on a conversation, the story that I brought to you Friday evening via CBS News of the profound over-medication of children who happen to be foster children in America. You may recall the story involved within the sample of 5 separate states, antipsychotics being given to infants of less than 1 year of age. It also involved, in some cases, children and teenage foster children being given handfuls of as many as 7 different psychoactive medications, psychotropic drugs, psychiatric drugs, which competent practitioners said there's no way you should ever do. It was, in a word, disturbing. Well, Michael wrote in and he said, just listen to last Friday's show, so much to say. First, thanks for the Tim Minchin song, White Wine in the Sun. Although I'm a Christian, I'm also happy to live in a pluralistic society, and I'm just as delighted when someone wishes me happy holidays as I am when they wish me Merry Christmas. See, Michael is not a fundamentalist strange agent. You know, remember, the American Family Association has a list of stores that ain't saying Merry Christmas enough. Michael says, I tend to say Happy Holidays if I don't know the person well, unless it's glaringly obvious they do celebrate Christmas so as not to offend anybody. Also, the line about Tim's sweet blue-eyed girl moved me. That's usually the part of the song where the tears start welling up in my eyes. I thought immediately of my 2 sweet blue-eyed boys, ages 2.5 and 7 months, and how we live hours from any close relatives. So for Christmas, those boys are going to get to see their aunts, uncles, grandparents, and great-grandparents for the first time in a long time. For my younger one, it'll be the first time he meets most of them. He was born in critical condition with viral pneumonia and spent 2 weeks in the NICU. He was breathing 150 times per minute and still couldn't get any air. We almost lost him several times, but now he's healthy, happy, and just starting to crawl. This Christmas is going to be quite the celebration for us. And I'm quite happy that half of the proceeds from the song go to autism research. You would not believe the progress being made in that area. As a school psychologist, I have the privilege of working with a lot of kids who are under the autism spectrum, as well as with their amazing families and some extremely skilled and dedicated teachers. They're special, unique kids, and they deserve all the effort that is being put towards understanding their condition and finding effective strategies for coping with it. Finally, I have to say that your conversation with Sandra rubbed me the wrong way just a little bit. The data you quoted about over-medicating foster children, including infants, is shocking. I work with many children who are in the foster care system and have seen it firsthand. However, please understand that those medications do not come from the school, at least not the public school. There are some school programs which are located in residential or hospital settings and which have a psychiatrist on staff. You and Sandra both complained that kids act up, get sent to the counselor, and from there to the doctor, and the next thing you know, they're a zombie. I think those were my exact words, as a matter of fact. I guess I can't speak for every public school system in the country, but at least in Pennsylvania, that's just not how it works. School personnel are prohibited by law from recommending medication to parents. As a psychologist, I have more training in this area than any other school employee, and I will sometimes try to talk privately with parents about the pros and cons of medication, but I always preface it by saying that I am not a medical doctor and that they should consult with a child psychiatrist, and we always respect parental choice. I tell parents that we will deal with their children however they are when they hit the door in the morning. Whether that's calm, wild, out of control, whatever, we'll deal with it because this is a public school and they have a right to be here. In my experience, the kids who are on multiple ever-changing medications are generally being seen by multiple doctors, psychiatrists, who aren't communicating with each other. Interestingly, Texas Betsy had pointed out something along the same lines in saying that a lot of times the foster kids that she sees or has seen in the course of her teaching career will not be in the same foster home the next year. And they won't necessarily see the same doctor from visit to visit. So I think those two concepts jive together. Anyway, to go back, Michael says, in my experience, the kids who are on multiple ever-changing medications are generally being seen by multiple doctors, psychiatrists who aren't communicating with each other. So the family doctor will prescribe an antidepressant, then the parents will take them to a psychiatrist who will prescribe a mood stabilizer. Oftentimes, when kids are hospitalized, the psychiatrist at the hospital will discontinue all meds, cold turkey, and write new prescriptions for two or three different new pills, all within the space of a week. And then they wonder why kids act up in school, can't learn, and can't fall asleep at night or can't wake up in the morning. On the other hand, I work with a lot of kids whose disabilities are well controlled by medication. A lot depends on the relationship between the parents and the doctor doing the prescribing, as well as that doctor's willingness to review the kid's medical history and determine what other interventions have been attempted. And, of course, I think what Michael points out something that highlights the problem as evidenced by the story from Friday, and that is the fact that these foster kids don't have real parents. Their real parents have given up on them, have disappeared, have died, any number of things. And it is a matter of the luck of the draw as to whether or not they get them, get foster parents who are caring or who will even be in their lives a year later. So Michael says, anyway, I don't mean to nitpick. I just wanted you to hear from someone who works in the public school system about this issue. Keep up the good work, Mike. And I really do appreciate the input here. One of the things that I think Michael brings up in this that is very, very important is he says the kids who are on multiple ever-changing medications are generally being seen by multiple doctors, psychiatrists who aren't communicating with each other. And it really does go beyond that, though, doesn't it? Because it is at least my experience. I mean, every time I go to my local physician's assistant, not even an MD, the nurse who works with him sits down and verifies what medications I'm on, even though I've been on the same medications as long as I've known them. It isn't changed. But every time I'm in there, are you still taking it? Yeah. And the same? Yeah. And are you taking your aspirin every day? Absolutely. And your butter pills? That's a joke. My anti-triglyceride, anti-cholesterol medication. Yeah. And still taking them the same way? Mm-hmm. But in instances where we're dealing with foster children, one of the most frightening things out of this is that it appears, if it is in fact, and we don't have time to go into the full draft report itself, but it appears as if what Mike is describing here is a situation where the doctors and psychiatrists aren't even taking basic histories. And how many drugs is he on? And what are the drugs? And how many milligrams? And how many times a day? Because if Dr. A prescribes drug A and Dr. B doesn't take a history that includes finding out about drug A, then Dr. B will prescribe drug B, Dr. C, drug C, Dr. And the next thing you know, you've got a kid on seven potentially devastating medications. Now, I'm not going to get all Tom Cruise and say that, you know, these children don't need to be on any medications. There are no children that need to be on. What they need is they need their thetans checked. Or any of that Christian Science garbage. But the fact of the matter is, all medications are, to one degree, every medicine is also a poison. And And with that in mind, and with also in mind the fact that most of these serotonin reuptake inhibitors that are prescribed for these teenagers and younger children, not one of them, I think, or very few of them, if any, are actually approved for use in children. And therein lies the rub. Thank you very much, Mike, for the considered email. Competition's coming in on the Who Said It. You'll recall that the line about propaganda, the purpose of propaganda. We have a Vince Lombardi. Nope. General Jack D. Ripper out at Burpleson Air Force Base. Nope. The Dulles Brothers? Nope. But no, we have a winner. Mark in Florida got it right. It is, in fact, Goebbels. And not the one who used to appear on Hollywood Squares. No, the Nazi. But if you take that quote, and you watch, say, 4 or 5 hours of Radio Rwanda, Fox News. If you do that, then you will in short order understand what the operating principle behind Radio Rwanda is, what the operating principle is behind Rupert Murdoch and all the filthy freaks who work there. The essence of propaganda consists in winning people over to an idea so sincerely, so vitally, that in the end they succumb to it utterly and can never escape from it. How many people, once captured by Fox News, get well from it? You know, our good friend, horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner, once, in the course of his clinical practice, identified a real live, no kidding, if you watch him for 3 or 4 hours, you'll find out, like I said, the name of the book was The Fox Syndrome. The name of the book is, it's still available on Amazon, The Fox Syndrome, Shared Psychotic Disorder. And in it, Rick lays out in pretty plain terms the sickness that happens inside the mind of people who watch Fox. And the sickness happens inside the people of the mind, the minds of the people who watch Fox, because Fox is engaging in classic Goebbels propaganda techniques to twist and warp their minds. And I think eventually, horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner will be some sort of a footnote, or at least acknowledged as the first person who identified this, because we get closer and closer and closer. You know, that Fairleigh Dickinson study that came out not too long back that pointed out that people who don't watch news at all know more about current events than people who watch Fox. Yeah, Fox watching is not a matter of being tied into current events. It is a matter of being diverted from them. Fox watching is almost a mental disorder. It may be, depending on how you read what horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner says, it is a mental disorder. It is a shared psychotic disorder in which the psychosis is happening in a number of people at the same time. And incidentally causing them to engage in psychotic behaviors. So, that's just a start for the evening's program, but it is also, I should note, and I have, Monday. And with the weekend, as I noted, being what it is, Mondays are special here because, well, because the morans are loose. It's Moran Monday on the horn. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. Step right up to this thin cybernetic veil
of canvas and look behind it if you dare. If you dare. For less than the cost of one thin dime per hour of programming per month here on the Horn, you can hear the morons. You can be aware of them. All manner of morons. Morons from government. Morons from everyday walks of life. Morons from religion. Morons from marketing. Morons. 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 Ladies, hang on to your purses. We do not recommend that you bring small children into the Moran Monday tent. You can't tell the morons without a program, and the Horn is the program wherein you can tell the morons. You can always tell a moron, you just can't tell them much. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in morons.
Where to begin? Oh, where to begin? You know, I do that little bit of shtick, and I see myself standing there with the straw boater hat on and some some plus four knickers and no, not knickers like underwear in England. No, what we call knickers here that, you know, golfers golfed in, and you know, the red and white striped shirt with the little arm garters and stuff, and waving the cane about.
Oh. And it really is that way. I mean, I feel like a tour guide through Ripley's Believe It or Not auditorium this evening. Every week I think, wow, I haven't seen morons like this in a while. And then the next week comes along and it's like, wow, last week we weren't even trying. Holy mackerel. I mentioned marketing in the Barker pitch. I saw something over the weekend when I was sitting down trying to watch a perfectly innocuous football game. It's 2011. You know, I find myself saying that quite a bit. It's 2011. And I say it with a degree of sort of shock and consternation in my voice. Because there's shock and consternation in my spirit. It's 2011, and I suppose we are far removed now from that long ago, 7 years ago of 2004 and the 2004 presidential campaign in which the Bush campaign stole Ohio and probably killed a man in a small aircraft. Don't cross him. Don't cross him. And I remember when a big to-do was made, and I kind of swore not to eat any more Wendy's, and I largely haven't. When Dave Thomas, conservative Ohio founder of Wendy's Hamburgers, have they lived down that worm rumor yet? If they haven't, could we get it started again? Bunch of godforsaken Republicans. Of course, I don't know many fast food chains that aren't Republican. They're not exactly in a wholesome business now, are they? But I remember when Dave Thomas, who has since gone on to his long home, his reward, shuffled off this mortal coil. I remember when Dave Thomas hosted an event for Dim Leader, Pretzel Boy. What's Malloy call him? Raisin Brain. That was the one that always nailed me, Raisin Brain. He hosted an event for him in which they feted George, and George talked about how we were going to grow their pie higher or some sort of typical drivel. You know, this kind of stuff.
So I hear the voices, but I'm the decider.
Yeah. And I met some people at the airport in Ohio, and they told me, you got to help me pluck these onions, you know, pluck them. He's like Daffy Duck on dope. And I couldn't help thinking about that as I was innocently watching the television this weekend. And a Wendy's commercial came on. And this is an official Moran Monday nomination, I kid you not. A Wendy's commercial came on to pitch the new Wendy's burger. How long's the Big Mac been out? Yeah, a while. Well, Wendy's has finally decided to take a run at the Big Mac.
They've got two Wendy's Square hamburger protein substitute patties covered in cheese product spread substance, to which they add a buttered bun, a buttered toast, Dave's toasty buttery bun, and add special sauce. You know, some Thousand Island sort of derivative. Okay, so I'm not sitting there getting hungry going, want me one of them? I seldom get hungry at those kind of commercials. I can get absolutely... I can go into paroxysms of rapture over a commercial about... No, not that either. Well, anyway, they've named the burger... And this is the Moran Monday fire the marketing genius that came up with this, or else it's a sad commentary on the profoundly amnesiac nature of the American cultural memory. They've named the burger the W Burger. Now, granted, it's Wendy's. I understand that. But nobody says, you know... A lot of people, when they're going over to the Golden Arches, they say, I'm going to McD's. If you're going to Hardee's, you're going to Hardee's. You're going to Carl's Jr., you're going to Carl's Jr. But McD's, as opposed to McDonald's, it's kind of eponymous. If I'm using the right word there. Nobody says, I'm going to W's for Wendy's. We all know... Republican and Democrat, independent, green, libertarian, teabagger, whatever. We all know in here in the second decade of the 21st century, we all know what W means. It's kind of like knowing what the clap means. No, not that. But some marketing genius... either within Wendy's or hired by Wendy's, decided to name that Big Mac wannabe the W Burger. And honestly, if you had a Thousand Island dressing Jones, such that, as another commercial puts it, you caught yourself drinking Thousand Island dressing through a straw, blah, blah. Even so, would you name a burger W? Have they forgotten? Or do they presume that we have? Did the marketing department at Wendy's just decide that they didn't want to sell burgers to the liberals and progressives who remember that almost all of the economic nightmare that we've been dealing with since 2009... we were dealing with before then, because it is the collapse that was brought on by the disastrous failed economic policies of the Bush administration? Do they just presume we've forgotten about that, or do they just figure that we're all out there munching on our arugula and ain't going to order no damn burgers nohow? The W Burger. If you're like me, it is enough to reinforce the urge not to get anywhere near Wendy's. I checked out their Twitter stream, and they were tweeting about it. Have you had a W? What did you think? So I retweeted that with a little, never in a million years, buddy. The W Burger, our first nominee for Moran Monday. Grrr, nasty, just nasty. But we're going to be busy this evening. We got lots of Moranity. You remember how Jerry Falwell and Doc Dr. Dobson, who couldn't put on a Band-Aid without coming near killing somebody, and oh, the rest of the family values, fundamentalist, literal interpretation of the Bible crowd. You remember how they went after they have this predilection for going after cartoon characters. It all started, really, and he doesn't get the credit that he deserves, or discredit that he deserves. It all started with that loopy old coot Donald Weilman of the American Family Association of Tupelo Muzluristan, who decided in the late 1970s, early 1980s, that Bugs and Daffy were demonic. Yes, Bugs and Daffy cartoons were... who knew that a cartoon could be possessed by a demon? But yeah, there was the Reverend Donald Wildman, always looking for a new hustle, a new way to suck another dime out of the credulous. Don't smarten up a chump. Remember, it's one of the commandments. He started it. But from there, a whole new field just opened up before the right-wing lunatics. And the next thing you know, Jerry Falwell is in a positive, absolute, lipid-laden lather over Tinky Winky. Because Tinky Winky of the Teletubbies was purple. And you know, the homosexuals, that's their favorite color, that purple. And Tinky Winky had a triangle on top of his head pointing downward like the opposite of the universal symbol for woman. But Tinky Winky was obviously male, but Tinky Winky was carrying a purse, and that meant he was a transgendered cross-dressing drag queen. And nobody in their congregation said, Reverend Falwell, buddy... I think maybe focus, Jerry, focus. We liked you a lot better when you were out there talking about the demon-possessed liberals.
Well, they're the ones who
they're the ones who make Tinky Winky the liberal communists. And after that, it was Dr. Dobson going after SpongeBob SquarePants because you know his best friend is a guy. His best friend's a starfish. His best friend's a guy who's pink, and his name Patrick, and SpongeBob seems gay to me. You gotta envy those people with the ability to determine the sexuality of imaginary animated creatures who don't even have genitals. I think it's the whole point of it. How do sponges reproduce anyway?
Well, not by traditional family values. Marriage, by God, that's how they don't.
So it was SpongeBob. A couple of years ago, they had a conniption over Happy Feet 1. Now, just in the last couple of weeks, they've had a conniption over Happy Feet 2. But really, the right wing have crossed the line, damn it. Because now they're after the Muppets. And there's no way you can make the argument that Kermit's... Well, no, you know, maybe... I mean, Miss Piggy's been chasing him for years, and he's a confirmed green bachelor.
Green, like them socialist commies that wanna plunge us into make us freeze in the dark without our coal.
I'm just being smart, Alec. Why don't you listen to the real version from Radio Rwanda?
Yes, then when he thought they were alone, he said.
There's oil under this studio, see? I'm gonna tear it to the ground, see? Sweet, sweet oil, see?
People still talk like that?
Maybe that's just how he sounded in my head. Either way, we've got to find Kermit. He'll know what to do.
Welcome back to Follow the Money. The Muppets are back and being terrorized by an evil oil executive in their new movie. Liberal Hollywood depicting a successful businessman as evil, that's not new. Joining me now, Dan Gaynor from the Media Research Center. Dan, let's point this out. This oil Muppet, evil man.
Now wait.
Dan Dickhead from the Media Research Center.
The Media Research Center? Really? Gosh, that sounds awfully official. I bet they've got a humongous budget. Yeah, I bet they do, too. I'll bet they got Coke money.
No, not like with the mirrors and the razor blades and the lines and the bad hair from the 80s. No, K-O-C-H.
I bet they got Coke money. Or Heritage Foundation money. Because they're a media research center, and they're going to find the liberal, communist, socialist, homosexual agenda bias and radical environmental. And let's just see what he's got to say.
He is. It's called Tex Richman. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, it's amazing how far the left will go just to stoop to, you know, manipulate your kids to convince them, give the anti-corporate message. I mean, this is a Muppet movie, for goodness sakes. The only thing green that should be up on that screen should be Kermit the Frog.
And so what's actually going on here? I mean, I'll put it out there. Is liberal Hollywood using class warfare to kind of brainwash our kids?
Yeah, absolutely. And they've been doing it for decades. I mean, Hollywood, the left, the media, they hate the oil industry. They hate corporate America. And so you'll see all these movies attacking it, whether it's Cars 2, which was another kid's movie, the George Clooney movie, Syriana, There Will Be Blood.
Syriana and There Will Be Blood were kids' movies? Well, bust my buttons!
Is it any wonder that if you watch Fox, you get stupider? Emery and Marveline are just sitting there in their Barca loungers with the Fox on, gumming their oatmeal and dribbling a little bit here and there, a little more every day.
You see, I remember Marveline. I remember when they started that Sesame Street that Sesame. You know how Sesame's get under my dentures? Yeah, I knew it wouldn't come to nothing good. Oh, that's right, Emery, that's right.
The movie's attacking the oil industry, none of them, you know, reminding people that what oil means for most people, which is fuel to, you know, light a hospital or heat your home or maybe fuel an ambulance to get you to the hospital if you need that. And they don't want to tell that story.
Dan, is there any Occupy Wall Street Muppets?
There should be. I mean, this is,
you know, even that took the freak from the Media Research Center a bit. Really? Occupy Wall Street Muppets?
Yeah, cause, I mean, Jesus Christ, the Muppets are owned by Disney now. That's really the Hollywood liberals? Disney?
The Muppets died when Jim Henson died, as far as I was concerned. I hope I'm not hurt. Are there any children in the room? Okay.
Kids, this is, you wonder why we've got a bunch of Occupy Wall Street people walking around all around the country. They've been indoctrinated literally for years
by cartoons.
This kind of stuff, whether it was, you know, Captain Planet or Nickelodeon's Big Green Help or, you know, The Day After Tomorrow, the Al Gore-influenced movie. All of that is what they're teaching, is that corporations are bad, oil industry is bad. And ultimately, what they're telling our kids is what they told you in the movie The Matrix.
Right.
A Matrix reference? Red pill, blue pill? Big pill, small pill? Golly, this is... Is it possible, and I know this would never be allowed to be said on Radio Rwanda, is it possible that people just look at the world around them and figure out that corporations do evil at a rate far higher than ordinary human beings do? Because corporations are, of course, immortal and pay very little in the way of taxation and eat up lots of our resources, and our military, our beloveds, are sent off to strange foreign lands to fight to preserve corporate power. Is it possible that you could just observe the world around you and figure this stuff out? No, the liberals have to spoon-feed it to you through Captain Planet. Did anybody actually watch Captain Planet? That was... Okay, I'm probably going to get hate mail. That was a terrible cartoon. I'm spoiled, though. I was raised on, what is it, 7.5 frames or more per second Warner Brothers classics. You see, I never even cared much for Tom and Jerry and MGM and all of it. And God knows Disney cartoons did absolutely nothing for me. Too saccharine. But it was the very real, very literate, very erudite, very head-scratchy, very... You know how my parents responded to me when I was a little kid? I'd see something in a Looney Tunes cartoon, and I'd say, "Hey, Dad, what is?" And he'd say, "Go look it up." I have a feeling there's an entire generation of people who were sent off to the World Book or the Encyclopedia Britannica when they were hard copies. See, once upon a time, the Internet sat on a bookshelf at the end of your hall where everybody could get to it when it was time to do, theme papers in school. The Internet was called the World Book or the Encyclopedia Britannica because everything was in there. Barring that, there was the library. But that's what... go look it up. And so, you know, there's little Bob with... Volume D, who goes to look up Dwight Eisenhower. Oh, that's an E. Puts the D back, gets the E, looks up Eisenhower, and then finds, curiously enough, Einstein. And the next thing you know, the parents haven't had any problems out of little Bob for several hours. Little Bob is immersed in learning. And then there's those heathen liberal newspapers, too, I guess. And, well, there's no liberal broadcasting, so to speak, at least not much anymore. We can talk a little bit about what's been done to Green 960 in San Francisco here in a few minutes, and I hope we do. But no, the right wing, the GOP, are such godforsaken simpletons. I mean, there's not much difference, frankly, between this creep from the Media Research Center... bemoaning, "Oh, they're making the children hate corporations. Whatever shall we do?" There's not much difference between him and some idiot right-winger, John Bircher in the 50s. "Well, that Eisenhower, he's a communist. They're all communists. Everybody's a communist but me." Right? But this just, you've only heard the front end of the crazy. This keeps getting crazier by the moment.
"Mankind is a virus on poor old Mother Earth."
All right, Dan, I'm sorry, we ran out of time. I'd love to bring the story up again. But I remember when I was a little kid, we were poor, we were dead broke, in fact, and my parents would see someone wealthy driving by and be like, "See that guy? He started a business. He worked hard. You can be like that someday." Not pointing the finger at Tex Richmond.
We lived in a
bad
box.
Guy. Dan, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks very much, Eric.
All right, Carolyn Heldman is back along with one of my fantastic co-hosts on The Five, Andrea Tanteros. By the way, Andrea, the only good number on Sesame Street is clearly 5.
Yes.
What's going on here?
Well, it is. It's brainwashing in the most obvious form, right? I just wish liberals could leave little kids alone. Why does there have to be some kind of political message? I thought Sesame Street was supposed to...
Now wait a minute. She wishes liberals could just leave little kids alone. And she's got a problem with this new Muppet movie. But Jerry Sandusky, who boy raped an ungodly number of children in the showers there in the Penn State, he was a registered Republican. By the way, we'll just get past this real quickly. Another Moran Monday nominee. Not Jerry Sandusky. Jerry Sandusky's lawyer. Who lets his client sit down with the New York Times and start implicating himself? I mean, I like all children. I like boys and I like little girls. And especially, when they're about 10, 11. And the lawyer interjects and says, "But not sexually, Jerry." "Oh, no, not sexually. Not sexually." How does that lawyer get to keep a law license? I mean, it wasn't just Jerry. I mean, the first time it was just Jerry calling up Bob Costas. This time through, well, we're going to rehabilitate his character so the lawyer's going to come along for the interview. How is that clown not malpracticing? So there's your legal Moran Monday nomination. But let's get back to... this babbling bobblehead wanting the liberals to leave the children alone.
Sharing and being nice to people. But
yeah,
over
that
the years,
sucks.
They've gotten more liberal. I mean, just a couple months ago, we talked about this on The Five. Remember they had the hungry Muppet, mm-hmm. the starving Muppet? Mm-hmm. Well, you look out
the
there, we've
Muppet,
got Medicaid.
Yeah.
There's a record number of people on food stamps. We have SCHIP. We have WIC. There's all these programs out there to take care of hungry kids. What?
That the Republicans want to destroy each and every one of, he said, hanging a preposition out to dry. Why do we need a hungry Muppet? Why do we need an AIDS Muppet?
Would that Muppet be starving?
Yeah, Dr. Altman, maybe they should have the hungry Muppets, the food stamp Muppets, and have the evil person being the Obama administration, Obama. After all, under Obama, food stamp usage has gone up 40%.
Well, Eric, I'm going to say it's pretty Orwellian to blame that on President Obama, considering that he's in support of programs to help people who are suffering. And yes, we have seen poverty rates go up despite these programs.
I said under Obama, the economy has gotten so bad that 40% more people, Americans, have had to use food stamps than prior to Obama.
Right. Right, and I'm bringing up that you seem to be insinuating or blaming President Obama for that when Wall Street and the liquidity crisis caused our economic recession. And I think it's a shame, you call it brainwashing, but I call this education. It's a shame they couldn't have put up, a financial services sector tycoon who caused this problem in the first place. But I guess, you'll settle for oil tycoons
who are
experiencing historic profits and killed 11 people with Deepwater Horizon.
Hold on, why do the kids have to be exposed to this?
I know, because liberals don't care. They want to get them at the youngest age. Remember, we've heard this before. You've got to indoctrinate the children at a young age. How about if you want to make it fair, Professor? If you want to make it fair, why not have a Barney Frank Muppet? Although Barney Frank looks like a Muppet anyway, so that wouldn't even be much of a stretch. Look, I think green energy, great. We should have an all of the above message. That would be fair if they wanted to do that. But whatever happened to be is why, Eric? Tell me. Why being rich is such a bad thing? Why being successful?
Don't ask Eric. Honey, ask Jesus. Ask the Buddha. Ask Muhammad. Ask all the thousands of Hindu avatars. Don't ask Eric. Eric doesn't know. Eric works for Fox.
Is such a bad thing. Tex Richmond, the Muppet's name is, that's the American dream, is to work hard and be successful. That would be a better story to teach our kids. And the reality is, there is, as you know better than anybody, no competitive source on the market besides crude at this point.
All right,
there isn't.
Go ahead.
What?
Not the crude oil, Tom, but I want to know why rich has to be evil. Why is rich bad all of a sudden?
Yeah.
That's the philosophical question of the year, if not the decade or the century. Yeah, probably a couple of hundred. No. When was capitalism invented? Oh, yeah, 1776. That's the real question. Why does rich have to be evil? What is it about vast amounts of wealth that makes people forget their essential humanity? Or so many people forget their essential humanity? What? Because it really does happen. We have but to look toward news stories from the last 3-4 months. That dirtbag foreclosure lawyer who threw a Halloween party mocking people who had lost their homes, who had, for all intents and purposes, lost their entire lives, and then he has the nerve to say, "You destroyed me because I'm a heartless son of a bitch. How dare you?" Yeah, what does happen inside the human brain? Let's discuss that question. But the answer is not going to happen on Radio Rwanda.
In today's society, and why are we teaching that to our kids? Is it? Is being profitable and successful bad?
It's not the profit and the success. It's the way in which you get there. And when Deepwater Horizon kills 11...
Oh, there's more brains. This isn't going to be allowed to last for very long.
People, and you have BP making now historic profits, and you see a sector that is price gouging during an economic recession, I think it is perfectly fine to educate children and say that's pretty villainous.
What
I
is drilling for oil a criminal thing?
Did you notice that? Oh, that was slick. It was oil slick. Since when is drilling for oil a criminal thing? Well, when it causes billions of dollars worth of damage, causes people to die and get sick, yes, a lot of times think disasters of that scope turn out to be the results of criminal conduct, which is frequently driven by, you know, avarice. Avarice being a big fancy word for, and I'm not explaining this to you, I'm explaining this to the weird little right-wing lurkers. Avarice being a fancy word for greed taken to its nastiest extremes. That's when, honey.
Is that such a bad thing?
No,
drilling
one's claiming
natural
that's
resources.
Criminal.
No one's claiming that's criminal. What I'm claiming is criminal is when you are in an economic recession and you have to make a decision between paying over $4 at the pump.
But these
and
kids aren't
children.
Making these
that
decisions, Professor. These are children.
Why
don't you wait until they get older and teach them important lessons like working hard instead of coveting what other people have?
Marketers have access to children. In fact, McDonald's has about 7 different ways in which children pressure their parents. If marketers have access to our children, why shouldn't we be telling them about the truth of the corporation?
Because in one hand you're talking about a Happy Meal with a toy, and the other hand you're talking about a huge ideological sea change in what we're teaching our kids. Class warfare.
Wait,
we're teaching our kids class warfare. Where are we? Communist?
No, we're not teaching our kids class warfare. If we were teaching our kids class warfare, they would hate the corporations even more, because the class warfare that's going on, they're waging against us, and as Warren Buffett has so frequently noted, they're winning. But great googly moogly. I'm just sitting here at the little stack that I've got, and we're going to get through it. We are. We've got all kinds of morons. For this Monday, Newt Gingrich gets a nomination. You know, he's going to participate in Trumpster Bait. That's the debate that the Donald. That guy with the weasel on his head and the weaselly look on his face, he's decided he's going to host him a re-pig-licking presidential pageant. Because just saying that makes me a little crazy. Donald Trump can't moderate a pig-licking debate because there's nothing moderate about Donald Trump. You know, it's like David in Tennessee noted. He said, "The Onion started this as a gag, right? They didn't? Really? The man with a weasel on his head and the facial expression to match, see why he's my head writer, is going to moderate the clown car passengers pageant? Really? If nothing else could and should prove the utter stupidity shown regarding and abject disrespect for the electoral process by the Republican Party, this ought to do it. Yeah, this ought to do it for you, America. Not that there isn't a boatload of other pure shite thrown against the voters' wall by the Repigs. This one alone will convince anyone not drinking the Repig Thorazine Kool-Aid. A, asking anyone to moderate a debate should mean said person possesses some of that verb's noun form in their intellectual makeup, to wit, moderation. From the soles of his shoes to the weasel hide atop that bag of greedy flesh, the Donald is in no way moderate. He's a repetitiously greedy whore, hell-bent on feathering his nest and cap with every pretty dollar bill or rare feather in the world. He's a game-rigging, bankruptcy-filing, business-partner-screwing con-man of the first water. Again, zero moderation in place. None. B. He still wants more spotlight. More cowbell. Wait and watch. He'll act just as much like the kid at the circus cutting line. He'll do stuff early on and he won't quit it. He'll try his best to hijack the pageant for Donald the candidate.
The pursed lip bloodsucker will be out for himself, big time. C, his ego will take over and overrule what intellect he does possess, and he will say shit a high school junior wouldn't say, looking to the morning after on the sidewalks of the Big Apple. So, Vinny, you see the Donald talking stupid last night? Jesus, Mary and Joseph, the man should have talked to some cabbies and maybe an ironwork or two for something that would have made some freaking sense, you know? Wait for it. From his podium, the one with the 4-inch riser for the little Polian to stand on, he'll top them all for one-liners from 2-digit IQ land. Yeah, no kidding. And all of that came from David before the other stuff started developing, like the fact that the Emperor Palpatine, I mean Ron Paul, said, no thanks, we're not attending. But even before Ron Paul said, no thanks, we're not attending, of all people, well, not, I guess, of all people, but you know what I mean, John Huntsman said, no thanks, won't attend, it's beneath the dignity of the presidency. And just as David predicted, as sure as God made little green apples, and if you eat a bunch of them, they'll give you a bellyache and the runs. There it was. John Huntsman said it was beneath the dignity of the presidency to participate in the Trumpster bait. I invented that word, by the way. You're free to use it, and you can use the hashtag on Twitter. Hashtag Trumpsterbait. T-R-U-M-P-S-T-E-R-B-A-T-E. Trumpsterbait. Yeah, you can feel free. But John Huntsman said that he wasn't interested because it was beneath the dignity of the presidency. So lo and behold, because for-profit 1% media are all about not the dissemination of journalism or information, but rather the entertainment spectacle of a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week, 365-day-a-year reality show, naturally the first thing that had to happen was to get that freak with the weasel on his head and the facial features to match on a program.
Ask you about your
debate.
Well,
that's fine, but you got to tell the truth, Chuck.
Let me ask you about your debate.
You have to tell the truth. Go ahead.
Mr. Trump, I would like to ask you about your debate. You have one confirmed attendee right now, and that is former Speaker Newt Gingrich.
Well, we just announced it a day and a half ago.
Right, I understand.
I mean, you know,
that.
It hasn't been out there for 2 months. We
Fair
announced
enough.
It a day and a half ago. People are busy.
I think
most of the important candidates will come. Huntsman has 1% of the vote. I don't think he's coming. And by the way, Mr. Huntsman called my office a number of times trying to set up a meeting. I didn't have a meeting with him. And then he went on a debate and he said, I didn't meet with Mr. Trump like everybody else in the room. So, you know, I'm sure he'll tell the truth about that because he's a Mormon.
He'll tell the truth because he's a Mormon? And you're what, Donald? And that means you tell lies all the time. So, Huntsman said no thank you, and responded as follows.
Do you want to weigh in on this whole Donald Trump issue and whether or not you think it matters?
Well, I'm not going to kiss his ring, and I'm not going to kiss any other part of his anatomy. This is exactly what is wrong with politics. It's show business over substance. If he had any courage at all, he would be running for president of the United States of America as opposed to manipulating the process from the outside. This is about real issues. It's not about show business. The presidency of the United States of America is more important than these silly game shows and reality shows.
Pretty fair, right? And then Emperor Palpatine, otherwise known as Ron Paul, weighed in. He said, he said that
we agree of, because Newt Gingrich, Dr. Newt, let's start calling him Dr. Newt, because it just sounds, I don't know, it sounds like Glop Cola or some other beverage you wouldn't want anything to do with. Dr. Newt. Dr. Newt came out and defended the thing, right? The Trumpster bait. And a senior Ron Paul campaign source said, "We agree, of course, with former Speaker Gingrich. This is a country of people of enormous talent, those who deliver thousands of babies like Dr. Paul and those who spend their time focusing on promoting themselves for profit. We even have those who lobby, but don't call it such because, as they say, they can make $60,000 per speech." While those of us in the Paul camp might disagree with Newt Gingrich about whether Donald Trump is the right man to host a serious political debate, we do agree New York is a wonderful place to go at Christmas. We're sure two average Americans like Speaker Gingrich and Donald Trump will have a wonderful time picking out gifts for their wives. We suggest a place called Tiffany's. We hear it's quite nice this time of year, and given their celebrity status, they can probably get special deals and $500,000 lines of credit. This may be the place where the cracks begin to appear in this clown car field. Newt Gingrich will fillate anybody that he thinks can deliver him a little bit more power. I mean, Jesus, when a weirdo like Senator Coburn from Oklahoma says that he couldn't support a Newt Gingrich presidency, and that guy's nuts! And there are other people saying much the same stuff. Yeah. You know, David in Tennessee noted, and this is a God's honest truth. When the broiled chicken sandwich left the Burger King U.S. and went to Burger King U.K., some damn body named it the Flamer over there. While traveling there, I gave my £2.10 for one just to say back home, I bought a Flamer in London for £2.10. Marketing. It's all marketing. Or at least it is with the Donald. So far, he's got one participant in the Trumpster bait. You gotta want. Is Mitt signed on? Because if Mitt does sign on, we know exactly what it's going to be like, thanks specifically to our good friend and the Internet's most brilliant satirist, Eugene Finerman of FinermanWorks.com, FinermanWorks.com. Donald Trump to moderate Republican debate, and here's the likely transcript. His profuse eminence, Donald Trump, according to the rules, all the candidates will have a chance to beg for my endorsement. But rules were never meant for people like me. Do you think that my time is going to be wasted on Ron Paul or John Huntsman? Maybe Michelle Bachmann if she were 15 years younger. There are only two people I want to hear, Willard Romney and Newt Gingrich. All right, boys, start your groveling. Romney. You're looking wonderful, Mr. Trump, and so is this very handsome and beautiful audience and the magnificent American people. But all of you should know that Newt Gingrich did not wash his hands after using the washroom. By the way, Eugene noted that this Trumpster bait would be a debate between Eddie Haskell and Eric Cartman. Perfect. Gingrich. As you're probably too stupid to know, hygiene is a foreign word reflecting the depraved values of the Roman Empire. George Washington and Jesus never took a daily bath, but Caligula and Nero did. And these Roman monsters are the type of people that Willard would rather smell than hard-working Americans. Cleanliness is next to godliness. Of course, you would be quoting that European socialist John Wesley. Can't you quote any Americans? When I wash my hands, whether I need to or not, I'm thinking of the noble and photogenic Americans who made that sink, those faucets, the soap, and the water. My cleanliness is the miracle of free enterprise, and I want to thank every one of you because I'm not sticky like Newt. Okay, boys, this is Trump. Okay, boys, now tell me how you would deal with Iran. Well, that is a brilliant question, Mr. Trump, and I'm certain that the dazzling businessman like you will appreciate my strategy. I would buy Iran. Of course, I would borrow the money from China using Iran's oil as collateral. Since I then will also be president of Iran, I will repeat the same managerial techniques that I used at Bain Capital. Looted assets, massive layoffs, crippling debts. There won't be a country left. Iran may have been conquered by Alexander the Great and Genghis Khan, but they were nothing compared to a Harvard MBA. Gingrich. And yet your highfalutin Harvard degrees didn't win the war in Vietnam! I was never in Vietnam, and neither were you.
But I was here in America, ready to protect this country when you were a spoiled rich kid vacationing in France.
I was doing missionary work there.
And is France now a Mormon country? Have the Osmonds headlined at the Folies Bergères? No, you failed, just as you would in Iran.
Trump. Newt, your critics think that you're too evil to be president. What is your response?
By definition, my critics are imbeciles. Evil is a prerequisite to greatness. Sociopaths make inspiring leaders. Think how Hannibal Lecter could administer America's health care. He would be my first choice for Surgeon General. Evil shows a creativity and initiative. It adds charisma to my brilliance. Who wants goody two-shoes here? To quote Disraeli, he does not have a single redeeming vice.
So you're quoting Disraeli? Well, he was foreign.
Are you saying that a Jew can't be an American?
Of course a Jew can be an American. Jack Benny was swell, and Irving Berlin, and...
So you're flip-flopping again. Now you just love all those New York liberal types. Can you at least be a consistent bigot?
Besides, maybe I didn't know that Disraeli was Jewish.
Come on, Mitt. Even I...
Oh, Rick Perry. Come on, Mitt. Even I knew that.
So, Willard, your critics think you're too nauseating to be president.
Don't bother to respond. Oh, Eugene. So, you know, you don't have to bother to watch the Trumpster debate now. It's all right there for you. By the way, with regard to the Fox clip, Tamara writing in, is that the same bobblehead who categorized pepper spray as a food sustenance?
Probably.
I mean, they're interchangeable, aren't they? Six of one, half a dozen of evil. Robert writing in, commercial television advertising and 20 or 30 years of commercial television advertising has no effect on children? No, I think that's the point. It has lots of effect on children, but we just don't want those liberals having any effect. We've got them in our little, we've got the rotten little tights in our greasy, avaricious little hands, and we don't even like trying to pry our fingers loose from around their parents' wallets. Yeah, Marty picked that up, too. The day after tomorrow was Al Gore influenced? Yeah, me neither. David in Tennessee noted, arithmetic history is being made before my very eyes. Willard Romney's had and always will have 20%. As the rest of the Repig-Lickin' candidates fall by the wayside, the final percentage total will be less than 100. Voila! Mathematical history made right before our eyes as every Repig-Lickin' disappears in just a little bit of sunlight. The support for that Repig-Lickin' crowd will eventually fall short of adding up to 100%. And that will be kind of mathematically miraculous. Do you see what kind of a Moran Monday we have in front of us today? Jesus! I got all this, and I haven't even gotten to the Cain wreck! You know, Herb Cain, suspending it... I actually had to take time away from watching the University of Cincinnati play the University of Connecticut, which I had kind of a stake in, because if Cincinnati won, that meant that my Mountaineers would go to Miami, not that I'd get to go or anything, and play the winner of the ACC championship game, which turned out to be Clemson, whom I hate. I had that because it was a Cain wreck. I had to go over and watch Herb Cain have a party with the language. Spend. We have a new word. No, not S-P-E-N-D. Spend. And these stories have been spinned. S-P-I-N-N-E-D. Spend. Whoop! But my favorite part of the whole thing happened before he even said a word. Namely, the pre-show music. Oh, how I wish we were in nearer time zones, because I would have loved to have been watching contemporaneously with John Fox. Because the guy was, some guy there was playing pre-show music through the PA system. And we're talking about Herb Cain, who by now we know had a problem with serial adultery that rivals that of Newt Gingrich, his hero. And as part of the pre-show music, just a little bit before Alveda King came on to tell us what a godly man Herb was, And just before a guy named Michael Steele came on to lecture us all about the Pledge of Allegiance, the pre-show music guy, who has, I think, probably by now been fired, or will never be hired by the Kane people again. Well, nobody's going to be hired by the Kane people again, because there aren't any Kane people left because the campaign's dead. But of all the music to play before a man accused of serial adultery comes out to speak, he plays Ugly Kid Joe, Life is a Highway, which includes the line, I'm going to ride it all night long. I'm going to ride it all night long, all night long. Man, that was restaurant quality. Huh. And then we got Newt's adventure in, you know, Newt's. Remember, I tweeted this earlier this morning. Say this over and over again. Anytime anybody mentions Newt Gingrich to you, your response to them is, you know what? Newt is what a dumb guy thinks a smart guy sounds like. I don't know who came up with that line. It's brilliant. Because it's true. He's out there saying, I'm Dr. Newt. I'm charged $60,000 for a speech. Apparently, you know, in ancient Rome, a person was deemed, a person of the upper crust, the patrician class, was deemed to be a bit wanting if they had not learned Greek, because while Latin was the language, Greek was the language of the upper classes. And if you really wanted to hurt a patrician, you'd say he had no Greek. Well, Newt has proven today that he had no Latin. And maybe a little bit later in the program we'll have time for a little Latin lesson. Right now, just a little break before the phone lines get all opened up. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. That's toll-free. If you don't want to cost us any money, because after all, we hang on by a shoestring, then you can direct dial to 304-658-3333, and we will get this Monday night Moran Monday conversation started. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
All my family problems disappeared overnight. We're all taking Zoloft and everything is fine. Sister's teenage just flew out the window. Mama's so happy, she laughs all the time. Sister has trouble getting along with the children. Mama hit daddy, I hit a little brother. And the family doctor gave us all these little pills. Now I can't believe how crazy we all went. All my family problems disappeared overnight. We're all taking so long. We'll be right back.
Patterson Hood, Patterson Hood, Patterson Hood, what hath thou wrought? That is, of course, Zoloft. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. It is 25 minutes past the hour, and we got lots and lots more to talk about through the course of the evenings, but let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Oh, what, I'm first? Oh, wow.
Hey, Sandra, what's up?
Yeah, no, listen, I'm still laughing, I suppose, maybe it's not funny, but that Bush, George Bush, can't travel to Switzerland.
Yeah, George won't be going to Switzerland anytime soon, because they might arrest his ass.
No, but the thing about these Republicans or war criminals or whatever we call them here, do they have no sense of irony? It's Geneva. Dude, out of all the places, I mean, the pretense at least, fool. I mean,
well, what? Yeah, because he was going to speak to a gathering of people. I mean, you can only, wait a minute, am I going to the Geneva Convention?
Oh, my God, I'm just saying, it's just, that's what would kill me the most. I'm thinking, wow, I mean, these people are clueless and shameless, all sort of wrapped together. But, because I tweeted that, and the hashtag I used was, stay in Texas, bitch. And that's what he needs to do.
Because they hang horse thieves in Texas. Apparently, serial torturers are just fine.
Well, obviously he's having problems, because every time dude talks about going places, you know, I mean, you know, either the head of the country, like in Canada, has to step forward to personally protect him, or he has to stay here. And like I said to you, you know, Obama better watch himself, because he's going to be in the same situation when and if he leaves the presidency.
Because, you know, there's a whole lot of nations out there that don't draw distinctions between who was tolerating and perpetrating the torture. They just don't like it.
Yeah, well, no, and I say if because, you know, maybe he's going to be the first president for life for the U.S., Obama, you know. I'll believe it when it's all said and done, but...
Well, you know, the Bush business with Switzerland, though, Sandra, kind of makes me wonder, when's he going... Remember toward the end of the second term when we found out that his family had bought this umpty bajillion acre parcel of land in Paraguay?
Well, yeah, no, somewhere, yeah, was there, yeah, I remember vaguely. I wasn't too sure.
Yeah, how long before there's a direct shot between, and maybe there already is, a direct shot between the Paraguayan capital, which I forget what it is, and, say, Houston?
Yeah, I don't know, but I mean, it's not really funny. It's quite disturbing that we've just are turning into sort of a rogue state, you know, because if you don't follow the international law, there seems to be, shock horror, countries that are more than happy to follow it, you know, because every time they round up some African dictator murderer, I'm always sitting there thinking, yeah, okay, that's all good, but, you know, spread the wealth, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Misery loves company.
We got this bullshit over here. I mean, Dick Cheney should be right where Milosevic. He should be right there. In fact,
maybe even taking the memorial cell.
I mean, you know what I'm saying? Because if there's not a war crime, I mean, Kissinger, his ass can't travel either.
No, that's true.
I mean, France, he can't go to Paris.
Can't go to Spain.
You know. It's Spain, anyway, but I don't know, that story just really, I just was laughing and shaking my head at the same time thinking, oh my God, you know.
Well, I love the desperate backspin that said, well, no, he's not coming because there were going to be protesters.
Yeah, but in the meanwhile, you got all these human rights groups with a lot of legitimacy, you know, filing 1,200-page briefs in the various courts of the various European capitals and wherever else they can. You got Malaysia convicting bitches day and night. They got Blair and Bush recently. You know what I'm saying? And yeah, okay, it don't hold no real weight, but it's shocking, you know?
And there's something beyond it, Sandra, and that is the fact that, well, you don't, I mean, you mentioned that, you know, 1,200-page brief. the guy who started, and this is the weird part, the guy who started raising one of the big stinks in Switzerland was a member of its far right wing party.
Shut up. No, I didn't know that.
I just read further down into the story itself, and there it was. So-and-so, a member of the far-right party, was the one who blah-blah. Really? The right wing? I thought they liked this.
Yeah, well, no, because I just read up to the point where they were talking about some of the lawyers from the, you know, Human Rights Watch and Amnesty, and, you know, they're all, a couple of them are Americans, you know, so it's just kind of like, that fool is on the run. I mean, I don't know what, I guess the bubble has to pop at some point if you can't travel.
Well, he's gonna be very, very sad sooner or later because...
Well, he don't travel anyway, so it's not really, you know what I mean? I don't think it's...
Well, he has no basic curiosity about the world in which he lives.
And they also said in Switzerland that, oh, there's still some sort of, you know, diplomatic immunity that he would enjoy if he actually did travel. But...
As a former head of state, yeah, they ran right out to say that.
Yeah, so, I mean, but it's more kind
but,
of...
But just a second, isn't that guy from whichever state in Africa, isn't he a former head of state?
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what I mean. It's like they don't have a compunction with rounding up those heads of states. And God knows the guy that they rounded up was, you know, he was awful. What was his name? You know, the one who wouldn't give up the power after losing the presidential election in the Ivory Coast. So, I mean, he was nothing nice, or he is nothing nice, but I didn't see F.W. de Klerk or any of them motherfuckers in The Hague.
Nope. Sorry.
You remember seeing them?
No, I missed that. I missed that part.
Did we miss that one?
Yeah, and by the way, the Swiss guy, Dominique Bettig. A member of parliament from the right-wing People's Party wrote to the Swiss federal government last week calling for the arrest of Bush for alleged war crimes if he came to the neutral country. You know,
well,
don't screw with the Swiss.
No, but it's just kind of, I mean, it's just disturbing that, you know, there's no accountability in our country and they have to run afoul of international law. And then what? Here in America, we're supposed to be outraged about it? Shit. I don't know. You don't have too many legs to stand. You don't have a leg to stand on to complain about George Bush when you realize what he actually has done, you know?
No. He's a war criminal.
You know? It's just
I know with the benefit of a little bit of hindsight and some distance between us and then, it's easy to... It's easy to see Cheney as the evil mastermind, but Bush is still a primary accomplice, and everything that happened still required his signature.
Well, not only that, but see, Bush came on TV the other day, you know, not the other day, but recently talking about, yeah, he waterboarded, and he'll do it again. This is what it's all based on. It's like he has admitted to breaking international law, and like that article said, civil society can't let these people be comfortable. And I just thought that was a kind of perfect sentiment. It's like, yes, civil society, in what little there is left, can't let this be unanswered. And so, however it makes this fool uncomfortable, that's fine, because as we know, Mr. Obama is not looking backwards, he's looking forward.
Yeah, well, I was about to say, wouldn't it have been nice if we could have just taken care of this sort of preemptively, but instead we had to look forward and not back?
No, but see, I go back to Obama because, you know, why? You know, he may find himself in the same situation, that's all.
It is kind of still going on, isn't it?
Well, no, it's just kind of not, you know, that. And anyway, speaking of Mr. Obama, I hear he apologized to the Pakistanis on the phone. I guess that situation...
Yeah, for killing 24 of their soldiers by accident.
Was kind of getting out of control in lieu of the general saying, you know, next time you guys can just answer back however you need to.
Well, and there's this little problem with the fact that most of the fuel for our troops in Afghanistan comes across from Pakistan.
Yeah. Well, no. It's just bad. It's really quite hideous. But anyway, I don't know. I don't, you know.
No, because, see, you don't want to be maintaining a Berlin airlift
into Afghanistan, because it's just not easy to do. What, you're going to fill up tanker planes and fly them to Kabul and distribute the fuel that way, and food and supplies? You know, that's a recipe for disaster, isn't it? I mean, one little shoulder-mounted missile hits one of those tanker planes, you know, kaboom.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's, it just makes me a little bit nervous because of that Pakistan is a nuclear-armed state, you know what I mean? So it's just a worry, not so much that they're going to set one off, it's just kind of so volatile there. And, you know, India, they're always lurking, you know, they always, you know, why not just finish off their sworn enemies? You know, just all is very unstable there. And the U.S. with their drones in every corner is really a sort of destabilizing...
Well, I mean, can we just sort of come to terms with the fact that there is actually a shooting war going on with Iran now?
I don't know. I mean, you know, it seems to be something going on there that's not overt.
Right. Well, you've got the whole, you know, the thing from last week with the explosions, the two explosions, the most recent one at Isfahan, and then you've got our drone getting shot down.
Yeah, that whole business, and the U.S. admitted that, what they say, something disappeared, they lost track of some madness. But, yeah, that situation seems to be spiraling. I don't know. And then you have the propaganda here sort of, you know, running things up a bit. It all is smacks of deja vu, but I just can't imagine that either one of these countries are that stupid, but who knows? Listen, did you go over the whole thing about the foreign car execs being arrested in Alabama?
Well, I mean, we've hit them as they came along.
Well, it was two of them. Do you realize?
Right, there's a German and a Japanese. And the charges were dropped against the Japanese guy as of last Friday.
Yeah.
The German had his dropped right after the governor of Alabama managed to wipe the spontaneous feces out of his underwear when he found out what had happened. It's Alabama-stan.
God.
And yet, look, who all's there now? Mercedes-Benz makes its M-Class SUV there.
Right.
Honda is in Talladega County. And Hyundai is in Montgomery.
Hyundai is there?
Oh, the vast... It's a humongous, state-of-the-art plant, and the vast majority of Hyundai's sedans are manufactured in Montgomery, Alabama.
Oh, my God. You know, I had a Hyundai. That's a shitty-ass car. I'm sorry.
Well, they were, but they're getting... They're getting huge. They're coming way up in the world. They've got a Jesus.
Are they?
Yeah, they've got a $60,000 sedan with a 5. Something liter V8 power plant in it that's designed to rival E-Class Mercedes, 5 Series Beamers, Audi 6 and 8 Series. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I just said, because I know when I had mine, it was just sort of one big lemon. But anyway.
Yeah, rattle trap little crap boxes. But they
I didn't know that they were down there too. Well, yeah, that law is seems to be causing more trouble than it's worth.
What do you think? I mean, these are, you know, when we talked about the Mercedes thing, David in Tennessee pointed out, Sandra, that Mercedes is very, very serious about the standards that it sets for its manufacturing plant. Pointing out, for instance, that the state of Alabama said, "No, y'all don't need all that wastewater treatment stuff. Shoot, just dump it in a river. Paper mill does the same thing." And Mercedes said, "No, we have certain standards we apply. We apply them in Germany. We apply them wherever we go. This is our plan." Well, whatever. Is the corporate culture such that maybe this kind of business would make the plants that are there think about leaving? Or any future plant coming there? I mean, let's say it's Honda. No, they're already there. Let's say, no, Toyota went to Mississippi. Let's say maybe it's Nissan or something like that, where, you know, some executive high up in Japan just takes a pencil and just draws a line through Alabama. Sorry, no, not coming.
They're not going to be doing that You know, I don't know about that because they might be moving all their damn factories over here real soon. I don't mean to laugh, but have you heard the latest with the Fukushima? Come on. The TEPCO actually admitted that, oh, by the way, there's like a foot between the molten meltdown mess and the fucking earth. They've admitted that it's just melting through. It's just going.
In other words, China syndrome?
Right.
Core on the floor?
Right. So, and also, Beyond Nuclear posted that there's just a thin dust of radiation from coast to coast, east to west in Japan now. So
that's not, you know, and that's, this is probably far in excess in the long run of what came from Hiroshima and Nagasaki, isn't it?
Yeah, no, but basically all I'm trying to say is that that poor country is being completely poisoned, and you know the sort of description they give about this quote China syndrome, and it's not one, Bob, it could be three. And they're all at different stages of being really close to the dirt. But the problem is, there isn't just a water table. There's a freaking ocean underneath. So, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? So, I was just looking at.
Yeah, it's generational stuff. And again, it's that marketing thing. It's the same mindset that gives you the Wendy's the W burger. It doesn't matter what the reality is on the ground. As long as we can get the people to either forget about it or believe whatever BS we're pumping out about it.
Right, because especially with the radiation, it's you know, kind of like this sort of tasteless death that, you know, oh, looky over there, there's a couple of three-headed children. Don't look over there, look over here. You know, I mean, I don't know what they're going to do, because 5 years, already you have a level of illness around that plant that's unimaginable, and apparently there's all sorts of secrets about just how many workers are dead, you know. So it just sounds really terrifying there at the moment, you know. I don't know, but I know that's away from Alabama, but I'm just saying that country sounds like it's in a world of hurt.
I get that.
And there was another article today, I don't know if it was in The Guardian or one, but you know, it's like, oopsie, you know, we just leaked 75,000 zillion gallons of whatever water into the sea over the weekend. Oops.
Oh, speaking of stuff going into the sea, up there near one of the tar sands monstrosity processing plants in Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just amalgamated Tar Goop Inc. just dumped umpty jillion gallons into the, what, I think it's called the South Platte River. Yeah, that was another one. Oh, look, how nice. Downstream, all of us.
Well, yeah, so that, you know, that's a bit, you know, it's a bit of a worry. And, you know, of course, I'm, you know, extra hyperbolic because I'm on the West Coast. And it's just kind of like, oh, dear God. But right quick, I have to ask you, what do you think about this law that they're about to pass in Ohio, which if your fetus has a heartbeat, no more abortion? That one. It's just, did you hear?
Yeah, yeah. That's that. What you're witnessing, Sandra, is the evolution of this whole life begins with the blastocyst movement. You know, we focused our attentions on Mississippi because it was happening there, but they also tried it in Colorado before that.
Yeah, well, no, but this is too much. That gives you a window of like 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
Well, it basically gives you. It gives a woman no real chance at all, because, and seeing as how I've never had one, I can't speak to it, but how long do you have to go before you're absolutely positively certain that you've missed your period?
Well, I mean, come on now. I mean, 6 to 8 weeks, it's obviously, it would, you know, cut about, like that article said, you know, 80% of the, you know, nevertheless. If you look at the first one, the article was doing my head in because it was in the money and policy section of the Times. That one did me. And then it was nothing but these horrible. One was 87 years old. It's like, motherfucker, get the glory. Why are you talking? You know, some 87-year-old man and some other horrible men, and it all just makes me feel sick. It's like, what is the problem here? Because you ain't talking about the prenatal, healthcare access, school, education, food, housing for all these plastices when they are born, are you?
Oh, no, no, no. Oh, no. No. Well, I don't know. Maybe we'll provide enough funding to give them 7 or 8 psychotropic meds and just keep them, you know, keep them quiet.
No, but listen.
Because that kind of, you know, that kind of dovetails with that clip from Fox about, yeah, you know, how dare these liberals go after our children to teach them that rich people are bad and corporations are evil.
Oh, no, that was pathetic, that. I just thought, oh, my God, I couldn't even believe. I mean, I just think, is that what goes on that channel?
Yes, it really is. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Oh, my God, because, I mean, they just sounded ridiculous, and I was rolling at whatever home chick was going off about, well, so, you know, liquidity, and she had a little few minutes where she was telling them what was what, and they shut her up. Oh, my God, the guy was losing it, trying to shut her
heresy,
up.
Heresy, shut up the heretic, make the heretic, gag the heretic.
Because when she mentioned liquidity, you know, that was it. He couldn't, I know his eyeballs were rolling in the back of his head, that guy, but anyway.
Liquidity crisis. Liquidity.
Well, no,
that's six syllables. You just lost 99% of the average Fox audience with that.
No, because poor people are the reason why the economy imploded, right?
Well, it's like that. It's like that. I happened to be up early this morning, and you know, any Bob story that begins with "I happened to be up early this morning" is not going to end well, Sandra. And I was watching that horse's ass Joe Scarborough, who says, well, you know, this, we thought it looked like it was good news because we had more jobs this last month, but it's not really good news, is it, Stephen Ratner? Well, no, it's not really good news because the private sector continues to lose jobs. That's right, the private sector continues to lose jobs, and just sort of, and you know, this is MSNBC, and just sort of lets that just sort of dangle there in the ether, Sandra. When you can't say the private sector is losing jobs as if, you know, there's just, what, thousands of cops and firemen and teachers and essential services employees who are going, ah, screw it, I'd rather be poor, I'm leaving. You can't just do that. The reason the public sector is losing jobs, because it might be 300,000 new jobs if the government was still able to hire instead of cutting jobs off and throwing people out on the streets. You can't just say that the government jobs are disappearing without saying why.
Well, no, but you can if you're on that Radio Rwanda. I mean, they don't. It's just incredible, which is sort of, you know, why I was so disturbed about the Green 960 in San Francisco.
Well, yeah, and let's do talk about that if you've got a second, because Marty, who is in your neck of the woods, also tells me that he says here in Sacramento, he says, ask Sandra about this. Clear Channel's flipping the simulcast switch tomorrow. It's a quote, but it's apparently already been done. Creating FM News Talk 92.5 and AM 1530 KFBK, so that they're just going to be feeding a steady stream of right wing filth on simulcasted on both the AM and the FM band.
Yeah, no, I mean it just seems to be out of control. I'm like, you know, because I'm reduced to listening to sports radio here in Sacramento when I'm in my car because I can't bear to listen to anything else. I want to hear that Armstrong and Getty, and that's what's going to be blaring out in San Francisco? I mean...
Yeah, pass.
It's just... It's too much. I guess Randy Rose is going to be carried over because she's...
Well, because she is with Premier Radio Networks,
Premier,
which is the same outfit that... Here's the pyramid scheme.
Well, I mean, at least
Bain Capital owns Clear Channel.
Right.
Clear Channel owns Premier.
Mm.
Okay? And Premier, among other people, syndicates Randy Rhodes and Rush Limbaugh. So that explains why Randy Rhodes stays on, because they're just staying with their own product. Bye-bye, everybody else.
Well, no, I know exactly. I mean, they were talking about them going to... The whole explanation was just really bizarre. They're going to some HD.
Yeah, and nobody has an HD radio.
Yeah, right. And then FM HD and online. It's like, okay, well, I'm online anyway, MFers.
Welcome to the future.
Whatever. You know,
welcome to the future, guys. We've been living in it, for a while. You know, sitting here doing our Ed Schultz bake sale radio.
No, you didn't bring him. Listen, I don't even care.
No, see, every time I and everybody knows that I don't like to do the pitch for funding, Sandra.
Yeah.
Because I don't. I'm not any good at it. But every time I do that, I hear Ed Schultz in the back of my head saying, "Oh, that's bake sale radio. That's not real radio."
No, and, you know, I mean, I appreciate, you know, what Preston's saying, but I'm sorry. I cannot deal with some idiot who's going to call other progressive hosts and try to bitch them out. That's just not on. So I don't care.
Yeah, I mean, no. There's not enough of us to be driving wedges between us.
Too much. So, anyway, nevertheless.
Which may make me a hypocrite because I guess I'm driving a wedge on Ed, but I didn't get a whole lot of email defending Ed Schultz the other night. So,
well, I mean, listen, I'll give him credit for his talk up of the various sort of locked out workers around the country. Give him credit for that because there seems to be so much of it going on. I don't even understand what's going on with this sugar company.
Oh Jesus, I was about to mention them. It's Christmas, so you're corporate. You're a corporate thug, so naturally you throw your workers out on the street, you lock them out, and you bring in scabs.
No, but one
in Minnesota, no less.
$1.5 billion in profits, and the subsidies and the sort of trade protections that industry enjoys, it is an outrage. I can't even believe it when I think about how subsidized that industry is. How dare they do this to these workers, and how dare the political system not even step up to protect these workers? We're not talking about something that's operating in a free market. These motherfuckers are subsidized within an inch of their lives.
Yeah.
Screw over these workers like this? Unbelievable.
Right. I mean, it's
give credit for that.
And it's layered, and me too. I mean, he does great work with labor.
No, that's fantastic. So I'm all over that. But I can't even believe that story. It's an outrage.
Because it's not just subsidies. It's not like just farm subsidies. It's also consumer subsidies. Do you have and yes, you do. You got any idea what a 5-pound bag of sugar would cost? If the American sugar market wasn't as protected as it is, I mean, it'd be nothing.
It'd be nothing. I mean, we're paying a huge amount in order to prop this industry up. Yes, exactly. But like I said, I don't have a problem paying a little bit more to help an industry where decent jobs are happening, but I'm not interested in this. These people made $1.5 billion in profits. And they're turning around and locking out workers. It's unbelievable.
Well, and I think it shows you pretty clearly the toothlessness of labor law in this country, because okay, so there's been a lockout. So 7 years from now, Sandra, the folks who are wondering what in the hell they're going to do to make their car payment, their mortgage, their homeowner's insurance. Tires on the car, food on the family. 7 years from now, they'll get some relief because it's quite obviously a lockout and it's illegal. But what happens in the intervening time period? Because it won't be good.
They don't have $1.5 billion.
No, that's the whole point. They don't.
You know, but that's the thing. And, as we all know, labor needs the protection of government, oh my God, so much more than the other way around. But unfortunately, in this country, it's the other way around. Industry, business gets all the protection of government, and the workers get nothing.
Well, it's like we've said a million times before. Corporations and industry and business get the socialism, and working people get the moving hand of the free market.
Well, right. So as they say, the state, the right side of the state is robust, and the left hand of the state is emaciated.
Yeah, and with that in mind, let's go back to the Green 960 thing for just a second, Sandra. Because there's a manifestation of that there as well. The, you know, Green 960 was a Clear Channel station all along.
Mm.
But was it making money? Were they selling advertising? I'm not asking this hypothetically. I'd like to know the answers. Is there really that much more to be made on per inquiry ads about Swedish vacuum cleaners that'll pick up bowling balls and drop them on mattresses if you buy gold now?
Well, the answer is Fox News lost, what, $500 million before they made a profit?
Yeah.
Need we say any more? I mean, obviously, it's not the bottom line that's at risk here. What we have going on here is a major election coming up, and the media is using its power to push out whatever vehicle is going to be available for any kind of dissent.
Precisely. Okay? And with that in mind, and this is a bit of a criticism, but then again, I kind of live in a place where this criticism is reality for me. We're talking, okay, I'm in West Virginia. We liberals are rather scarce. I've often fantasized about what it must be like to go to somewhere where you might look at somebody on the street and think, look, it's another liberal like me. And San Francisco is one of those places. And you got to think there's a greater market in San Francisco for Green 960 than there is for Sean Flippin' Hannity.
Or Armstrong and Getty.
Oh, yeah.
God, it's just, every time I just think about it, I'm like, that's why I was reading that and just sort of completely incredulous, thinking, oh my God, is this some sort of joke? But it's not.
And so with that in mind, let me ask you this question. Where is the liberal money it would take to purchase a license and staff a station and hire a sales staff and maintain this format? Where is that person? You know, we're constantly being told by the right wing that George Soros is practically running a shadow government in the United States. Well, obviously he's not.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just the same old, where the, you know, media, corporatized media, isn't interested in providing citizens with the information they need to be informed.
But beyond that, the question I'm asking is, because I've heard it a lot, you know, I've heard liberals complain of it. You know, when we complain about the conservatively owned media, we're doing so because we know it and we live it, all right? But I've heard folks with Jed Clampett walking around money talking about how we need to understand media and we need to be out there talking to America. I've heard it more times than I can count, okay? And with that in mind, where are they? With all due respect to Al Gore, he's got Olbermann and Cenk Uygur on current TV. And I don't know anybody in the state of West Virginia that has that on their cable system.
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, no, it's completely, you're completely right.
And to the best of my knowledge, maybe I'll get an email back telling me, oh, no, Bob, you're wrong about this. I can't watch Keith Olbermann live on the interweb tubes.
No, we have endless analysis about the problem with the lack of infrastructure for the movement, liberal, whatever you want to call it. It's just not there, and you can't play the game if you don't have any places to have a voice.
Well, you cannot concede a field of contest to the other side and then at the same time have the right to turn around and scratch your little head and say, why are we getting our asses kicked? And why do, you know, what's the matter with Kansas? And why do people vote against their economic, why do they vote against their own wallets? You cannot concede something to the other side and then ask why are they succeeding when we're not even in the game.
And not only that, when you look at, for example, this whole child labor bullshit that is getting traction. How is that possible? Because of this sort of right-wing mainstream media infrastructure that's more than happy to accommodate something as odious as Newt Gingrich and his really fucked up ideas. You know, I'm looking at this guy and thinking, this is just not happening, you know, but it is.
Oh.
And I hear people on the radio calling in talking about, well, you know, maybe kids do need, you know, actually buying into that shit in some form or another, and it's just shocking because it's unbelievable. It doesn't even, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, but and that's coming from the same people who are so far removed from their own childhoods that they say things like, I walked 6 miles to school and ate mustard sandwiches for lunch and walked back home from school and it was up through 6 feet of snow and it was uphill both ways. They have, I'm convinced that they have lost whatever childlike spirit ever existed within them. So it's, but again, it's the same functionality as we're talking about with Green 960. It's the same functionality because essentially you're telling people, well, you know what, you're not the problem, and more importantly, the people that are the problem aren't the problem. It's those poor people. It's those other people. It's those dark-skinned people. It's those people who speak Spanish, and you know, go beat up on them because it's easy.
Well, what he's setting up is just another way for the oligarchy to get access to cheap labor and to destroy any unionization. I don't mean to be cynical, but I ain't buying nothing about his concern for children. But I do buy that they always want to have cheaper and cheaper labor. And if it's 9-year-old poor kids, well, who cares?
Because you know what? We've got the pictures of the 9-year-olds in the coal mines from 100 years ago, and we've still got coal miners.
Right, I'm just saying, it's like, that is just, you know, that's the story there. And, you know, I just can't even look at Newt Gingrich. He is so revolting. And the idea that he is anywhere near the Republican nomination after what he's done throughout his career is mind-boggling. It hasn't been that long ago when he was ran out of Congress for the corruption.
And it, and of all the people to point that out, at least it was the Ron Paul campaign.
No shit. You know what? I was rolling. That shit was on. I got to give it to old Dr. Paul. That was it. He wasn't joking around with that one.
No, and John Huntsman, I'm not going to kiss his ring or any other part of his anatomy.
Oh, yeah, and Donald Trump is, you know, I mean, talking about an ass. My God, if you look up ass in the dictionary, his face is there. He is hideous.
But what does this say about the power structure within the Republican Party, Sandra? Because any legitimate party that really was a national party and had some semblance of ideas would take a meeting in which that guy with the weasel on his head and the weasel on his face, and I want to host a debate. And they'd say, you know, don't you have a television show to tape? Go on. Get out of here. But they sat down with him and said, okay, Sandra.
Well, yeah, I know. And he just listened to him talk. He threw in his stupid show. And it's just kind of like, was that Karl Rove who was saying, why don't he run for president or somebody like that?
No, that was Huntsman.
Oh, right. Okay. I heard that Karl Rove was also criticizing him, and I was just kind of like,
But now it's, you know, now it's a big deal because the Dr. Newt, and I really do like that meme, Dr. Newt. We could do a parody from Kisses, They Call Me Dr. Love. But Dr. Newt now has a deal where, you know, the Donald's going to be a job creator now. You caught this, right?
Oh, right, I heard that. That was sort of like garbage in, garbage out. Come on now. They're gonna pick ten deserving poor, you know, deserving poor.
Right, it's Slumdog Millionaire Comes to America, right?
Oh, God, you know, they're all so disgusting. I mean, I suppose maybe, you know, if Marcosi worked the shit out over in Europe, I guess Obama could be quite sitting pretty looking at the circus on the other side right about now, right? But the Marcosi thing is a problem for him in Europe. So that has to be worked out.
And you know what? What's the Gingrich response? If only Europe would put its children to work. What?
What?
No, I mean that's what I mean. You know, if it works in America, it's going to have it's got to work in Europe, right? I mean.
Well, no, but the Italians are well on their way. Did you happen to see that clip I sent you? Of the welfare minister, you know, breaking down in tears.
No.
Talk, yeah. Yeah, I mean, look at that when you get a chance. But she's making, you know, she's talking about the cut, sitting next to Monti, the banker, prime minister, or whatever, president of Italy now. She's talking about the sacrifices that will have to occur amongst pensioners who, you know, have very little. And she breaks down in tears. And it's just kind of like, good Jesus, you know, it's very disturbing to see. And so that's the face of austerity. And if we shift over to Britain, did you see that article I sent you where they're going to be asking people in the middle of fighting for their lives with cancer to buck up under some are you fit to work or we'll cut your benefit off?
Right. Yeah. You know, go get your chemo and come to work.
Yeah. No. It's just, you know, so that is austerity in action over in Mercosiville. You know, I'm sorry.
I love that word, by the way, Mercosi. That's right
so
up there.
Fucking funny to combine those two, because ain't that the truth?
Yeah, I like that possibly better than Trumpster bait.
Oh right. Well, anyway, no, that's what they're calling them all over the foreign press.
So yeah, Angela Merkel and Nicolas Sarkozy have just been morphed into one sort of. Austere bag of flesh.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I didn't realize, and this is Teddy, of course, I have to drift there, but I didn't realize he was so damn short. He's like Napoleon.
Oh, he's tiny.
He's hecka short. So, yeah, so it's them two, and, oh, God, I don't even know what, I have nothing to say about Europe today. That just looks like it's teetering. I don't know what kind of plan they're going to come up with, but it's a worry.
But they keep saying, oh, we've got a plan.
No, but it's a worry for us because of, you know, our desire to keep Obama in office.
Well, yeah, among other things. And,
you know.
And for instance, you know, you think about, you know, we mentioned that Mercedes plant in Alabama.
Yeah.
And then there's the BMW plant in South Carolina.
Right, and all the other sort of interconnectedness of our dealings with.
And what happens? Euro. What happens to those if the euro goes below the floor?
Yeah, no. So I mean, it's, you know, I mean, Americans really need to pay attention to that. You know, we're hard pressed to pay attention to anything, but let alone some madness and a currency problem. But we need to, because that situation is. Bad.
Oh, and by the way, David in Tennessee just pointed out that the sole sponsor of Trumpster bait, Newsmax.
Yeah, that's right, Newsmax. I had heard that, and that's a joke.
Sorry. Right. So again, further evidence that the Republican Party just, you know, isn't serious about any of this.
No,
I mean, they've had YouTube debates, they've had Twitter debates, they had Newsmax, and.
It is just a horror show, and I'll let you go, but I must mention.
Oh, no.
I guess we're haters, because that Tebow, he keeps winning. So, yes, I'll admit, I'm a hater. I hate him.
Well, but there are changes. You know, I'm a detail kind of guy, Sandra. He's not Tebowing anymore. So, somebody sent him a memo.
Oh, because he can pass a bit?
No, he's not. No, I mean, he's not, you know, kneeling and praying.
He's not doing the kneeling. You know what? I can't even wrap my head around that.
Now he's pointing up at the sky, thanking Jesus for giving him a touchdown instead of letting some little Haitian kid have a meal.
Oh, so he's pointing to the sky?
Yeah, with two fingers.
Oh, God. Next thing you know, he'll be talking about, you know, the man upstairs. I hate that.
Well, I want to, given that voice of his, I just want to hear him talk about any man. It'll set Gadar off across the United States.
You're the one that thinks that he's hella suspect, huh?
Well, only because I've got a lot of dear friends with high functioning Gadar, that goes off at sweat condition alpha every time he speaks.
Well, he just comes across as a bit of some sort of...
Oh, okay. Well, this makes sense. Marty writing in, he says, Kurt Warner, who, of course, is an Uber fundy.
Oh, yeah.
Kurt Warner told him to tone the act down.
Oh, shit. So the other Christian... Okay, I got it. Well, they all stick together, I guess so.
Yeah, but the thing is, everybody's taking that sort of, well, I guess he's for real. Bullshit. That was the Vikings. I mean, no offense, but they're two and what?
Well, so Kurt Warner told him to, that's sort of like when Denzel Washington told Will Smith, you can't be playing those gay roles. I gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah. And but it was everybody. Oh, it was a miraculous comeback for the miraculous comeback was people. I'll give credit where credit is due. Willis McGahee ran through those tackling dummies who were on the field while the Viking defense was on the bus like a knife through butter. There's no doubt it was brilliant. And they
William McGahee, is he the one that went to Ohio State?
No, I think he's Miami.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I got some.
Yeah, because I remember Mountaineer defenders chasing him all up and down the field. It was humiliating.
Yeah, he's good anyway.
There were a lot. But it was you remember the old fun and gun offense? Well, this was like watching it because it was just balls flying all over the field. What was the final score? It was, there were 60 points scored between the two of them, Sandra.
Wasn't it like 32-34. I mean, it was a comeback type situation, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I mean, okay, so shit. The takeaway from this though is the idea that fool is gonna be in the playoffs.
It ain't over yet, but it's over. And see, remember how you and I had this conversation all about how at least they got a deal with the Bears in a couple of weeks. Well, that's next week. And did you happen to see the Bears score yesterday?
Well, I didn't.
Got beat 10-3 by Kansas City.
Oh, okay. So I knew they had lost, and I was thinking
three. That's three. That's the number after two and before four, and nowhere near seven.
No, but didn't they lose like a major star?
Well, they lost their quarterback.
Well, they lost him, but they also lost. I thought they. Well, anyway. Well, that's a bit of
so it won't be a surprise if next week in the thin atmosphere of I don't know Krusty the Clown Stadium at the Krusty the Clown Field at Mile High Stadium, it won't surprise me if they notch another win. But this business of he may have a strange. They had 46 total offensive yards at the half. Denver did.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. Well, he's a winner.
Yeah, no, I know what I'm saying. That's the only thing you hear in the conversation. The rest is like Charlie Brown's parents talking. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then it's like winner. No, I know, but I just am. It's just getting to me because I'm thinking, no, postseason it is. God, they must be salivating on Madison Avenue and in the various corporate boardrooms.
No, they're salivating at the home office of Focus on the Family in Colorado Springs, Sandra. You got to remember, Tebow's daddy is a sub. The Focus on the Family subsubsidizes the entire Tebow clan now.
Oh,
because okay, they've got a ministry.
So it's a racket. Oh, that's right.
They got a racket. They got a ministry. And their ministry is, of course, 501c3 tax exempt. So that means, garbage in, not garbage out.
So that just means that's just like a money printing operation they got going.
Right. And they're the ones who are, because I'm sure they're already shooting Timmy Tebow Miracle Baby Part 2 when he made the pigeons out of clay in the Philippines and caused them to come to life and fly. Remember the Miracle Baby ad from a couple of Super Bowls ago?
God, it's just hideous. But so, I guess, what's the coach's name for the Giants? Tom Coughlin?
Coughlin, yeah.
I guess he didn't keep his damn job. I know they lost, But that game was...
Oh, that was a great game. That was.
I think he kept his job for another year, even if they did lose.
And frankly, you know, Eli, I think Eli graded out fairly well against Breeze. But Jesus, you know, Drew Breeze is just...
You mean Aaron?
No.
Oh, you mean a Breeze? Okay, yes.
Yeah, the Giants and the Saints last night. Giants and Packers, I'm sorry. Yeah.
They played the Packers.
They
almost beat them. That was the thing.
Right.
Like,
yeah, and that's what I said. Eli graded out pretty good as compared with Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
And then Drew Brees just looked stunning.
Drew Brees, yeah. I mean, are they, I don't understand, I haven't been following the Saints this year because I know they had a bit of a rocky start, but are they at the top of their division or what?
They're okay. I think they're going to be okay. If it wasn't for Aaron Rodgers, he'd be the best quarterback in the league. No doubt about it. But God, I guess the Packers considered themselves as having gotten a little bit of a scare yesterday.
Yeah, right.
I heard one analyst after the game saying, you know what? Nothing phases them. They play to their crises. And it's watching the Packers is just damn fun because I mean that really is, that's professional football.
Well, the thing is,
as compared to say, you know, Tim Tebow, because in the first half, you know, our buddy John up in New York is writing to me going, "You watching this?" I'm like, "Yes," and I got the email from John just as I had watched Tebow go back try to throw just a little nothing swing pass over into the left flat. There couldn't have been 20 feet between him and the receiver, and he threw it with that gimpy ass sidearm motion he's got, and the thing was 3 feet out from anywhere the receiver could catch it at 15 feet distance. I mean, and everybody's on the Tebow train now? I ain't getting on until they beat somebody with a significant record.
Well, except for John Elway, he's very guarded, but he better watch out because the fundies are coming get him. So he's
I think they've already burned a question mark in John Fox's yard or something because what? You know the coach is there at the podium. Well, you know I'm a believer now.
Oh, it's painful. It's like ew. Anyway,
yeah, here comes lunch.
I know we're terrible. I just am sort of...
Well, no, you want terrible. I got terrible for you.
What?
Right before you go. Talking about little Timmy Jebo. I think David in Tennessee earns his own terrible toaster tonight. You think maybe really little Timmy Jebo did some football summer camps with Jerry Sandusky? Just asking.
Well, I wonder about his relationship with Urban Meyer. That looked dubious as well, don't you think?
Oh.
And that fool is at Ohio. I'm like, he's one coach that gives me the heebies.
No. See, Urban Meyer, they were desperate to have, you know, you get one, apparently you get 1 year at Ohio State. That's it, baby. They were desperate to have.
$1 million?
Yeah, they were desperate to have some high-profile coach. But if they'd done their homework, you know, their what's that fancy word out there in the business world? If they'd done their due diligence at Ohio State, they never would have hired Urban Meyer because the dude was an absolute train wreck those 2 years there, because he didn't want to coach, and he didn't want to put in the time. And remember when he retired and then he didn't retire?
Well, yeah, it was just well weird. Yes.
Yeah. Well, it turns out that when he didn't retire, that's because the AD came to him and, you know, begged him, but cried, got on one knee, "Please, Urban, don't leave us." And Urban says, "Okay," and then mails it in the rest of the season. Any Ohio State fan that thinks that this is going to be some sort of answer, I think they got an ugly wake-up call coming.
Shut up. Well, that's a lot of money they're paying that asswipe, $4 million.
Yeah, and I guess we'll all sit down and watch LSU play Alabama. I guess I'm okay with it because at my heart, even though I despise Nick Saban, you know, I'm a Tide fan. I was raised, you know, I just am. I grew up down there. You know, the day you're born, you choose Auburn, Alabama, and they segregate the maternity wards.
Well, you know, but it must be crazy down there if they poisoning trees and shit.
Oh, it is. It's absolute lunacy. But given my druthers, I really would. I would rather see Oklahoma State play LSU.
Wait,
because one of the things that was
no,
it's done. It's Alabama versus LSU. But one thing was pointed out on the ESPN selection show last night, and that is that my beloved Mountaineers, of whom I am a long-suffering fan, he said, you know, the Mountaineers had a ton of turnovers in that game and shot themselves in the foot. But he said, that's the same offense that Oklahoma State runs, and they rang up 500 yards of offense on LSU. And so you got to figure Oklahoma State would do something similar.
Mm. So you're saying that would probably be a better game.
I think it would be. Because what, you know, Alabama and LSU are almost mirror images of each other. Alabama has the better running back in Trent Richardson, but LSU has that crazy little criminal Tyrann Mathieu.
Oh God, yeah, LSU, yeah, okay.
I don't know. It won't be the exact same game we saw in November, but it'll be pretty close.
Yeah,
and frankly, frankly, LSU didn't win that game.
Right.
Alabama lost that game. Because there were, what, three missed field goals in a game that went to OT?
Yeah, no, I know that was, yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of yawn about it myself. Who's playing in the Rose Bowl?
You're getting Oregon versus Wisconsin. And that should be,
Wisconsin,
that should be,
yes.
That should be kind of fun. That should be a little battle between, I don't know, racehorses and road graders.
Yeah, no, that might be, see, I think that would be a little bit, yeah, I'm a little bit more interested. Well, anyway, the LSU. Mm.
And then, who is it, in the Fiesta Bowl? What is that? Now, this ought to be fun. Isn't that
Stanford?
Yeah, that's Stanford and Boise.
Oh wow.
Or no, maybe not Boise. No. Is it Stanford and Baylor? But anyway, it's Andrew Luck and another hotshot quarterback.
All right. Well, you know, that might be. I mean, it's funny how they were doing so well and it kind of all. I guess they lost that game. I guess that was it. Stanford, I mean.
Well, this
but you
this
know what's going to be interesting for next year, right quick, is USC, if that fool comes back, because they'll be off their suspension. And, you know, I'm not a huge Lane. I think he's a bit of a freak, but
he's nothing without his daddy.
Yeah, well, he had held it together. We'll see. I'm just wondering how they're going to be next season if they get that Barkley kid back, but we'll see.
They get off the probation? No, I think they'll raise hell. But you know what I want to see next year, and I will be a devoted follower of the Pac-10 to the extent that here on the East Coast we're allowed to watch Pac-10 games, and that's pretty dodgy.
Mm.
I'm going to be so watching Arizona because you know who went there, right?
Who?
Rich Rodriguez and Big Rich Rod and Big Hair Rita.
Oh my God! Yes,
so lock up the cheerleaders.
Hayden, yeah, that's great.
And so we'll let the Arizona Wildcats get that same warm fuzzy feeling the folks in Michigan had.
What about that freak from Texas, Mike Lee, or whatever his name is, in Wash? I'm like, no, not out here. You know that disturbed me.
We are delightfully shallow, Sandra.
Yeah, no, it's beyond tonight. Anyway, listen, I'll say goodnight.
All right, you take care. Have a good
one. Bye.
Bye now. It is Moran Monday on the Horn, and we will continue on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob. What's going on, man?
Oh, not a heck of a lot. What's up?
I just was wondering, what is the hourly wage for if you're working on the Mercedes assembly line, Alabama stand? What is the hourly wage down there?
I'd bet it's probably somewhere around $13.
Yeah, and what did it used to be? I mean, 30 years ago in Dearborn and in Detroit. They're making $20, $25, $30 an hour.
Yeah, oh yeah. And of course, none of these things down there are anything remotely resembling a union shop, and there's nothing like collective bargaining. And it's a, you know, Alabama is one of the most hateful, and South Carolina and Mississippi and Tennessee. There's a reason all of these foreign car plants are going down there, because they're all right to star states.
Yep. Because I was, I was just wondering, I mean, you know, it takes two to make a labor contract, of course, and I'm not here to say one way or another whether that $30 an hour is too much to make for welding bumpers onto Ford Galaxies. That's not the point. It's just how far things have sunk.
Yeah, well, God, you know, ain't nobody going to strike at Hyundai or Honda or Mercedes-Benz or, you know, Toyota's running ads, Reverbo, about how they're all, you know, proud of, you know, their new... We're building cars in Mississippi because Mississippi people care about cars. Have you seen that? No, you don't watch TV, lucky you.
Yeah, I do see a lot of imagery, and I see a lot of smiling, working class folks down standing next to that Camry. You can't help but see them.
And
so I wonder how they feel to be making like a third of what their dad made.
Well, they're not making a third of what their dad made, because their dad, you know, their dad may, well, I don't know, their dad may or may not have had a job. But if you want to compare apples to oranges, Reverbo, they're not, the guys working at that Mercedes-Benz plant in Tuscaloosa County, Alabama, or the Hyundai workers in Montgomery, or the Honda workers in Talladega, they aren't making what my dad made running a silicon furnace in northwest Alabama. I guarantee you that. If you compare 1970 dollars to 2011 dollars, they are not making anywhere near what my dad made.
Mm-mm.
You know, I lived in that little middle class bubble where there was a new car every 5 years, and after a while, Dad took the big step, and we became, wait for it, a two car family.
There you go.
That was about that was just a couple of years after we had gotten the color TV, not just any color TV, but a 1973 Zenith with a clicker.
You're talking about, you had the Space Commander.
Yes, yes, yes!
Bro, I don't want to wear out this bell, but yeah, the Space Commander.
It had three little bars. It was none of this highfalutin infrared crap. It had three little bars that generated a tone, and there was a tone receiver in the front of that humongous cabineted TV set. And one meant on and off, and the other went channel up, and the other did channel down, and the knob actually moved on the TV.
Yeah, it was cool. We had one. I don't remember. We had one on a black and white Zenith that I remember.
You know what drove
Everybody had Zenith TVs back then.
You know what drove my dad crazy? I accidentally found out one day, I was getting ready for school, and Dad was at work, and, you know, you wear a belt, you know, you're a boy, and in the course of wrestling my belt around my waist, the tooth on the belt jingled against the loop of the belt, and the channel changed.
Wow.
And so, if I was feeling particular, my poor father... He will have been in his grave for 5 years on February the 1st. And I think about what I put him through. And I'm getting paid back in spades now, by the way. I mean, if it's any comfort to, you know, the sort of spirits that wander around in the universe, Reverbo. But it must, because I know what gets done here that drives me just buggy. But I would stand just inside the kitchen and lean around the corner and jingle my belt real quick, and the channel would change from whatever my dad was watching.
But that was your job back then, to do that. Just like it's your son's job to do whatever he's doing.
Right, and you know, and that points out the idiocy and the hatefulness of Newt Gingrich. You know what? Because kids need the kids have jobs, and that's one of them. But instead, he wants them off there, out there working 8 hours a day. You know, 32-hour work week, because we wouldn't want to be paying any overtime or benefits or anything. But at half pay or quarter pay, being janitors, you know, I God, I hate him.
Oh, That's the last thing I want my kids to be worried about is having to work. I want my kids to worry about school and worry about college. And don't worry, kids, work is coming. It's that huge tidal wave up ahead. You can barely see it now, but it's going to just, don't worry, it'll be here.
It's going to wash right over you.
Really?
Oh, and by the way, you know, it's one of the beauties of the horn, Reverbo, that when you ask a real-time data question, you will get real-time data back. You said, you know, what are those folks making in Alabama and Mississippi, Stan, and so forth?
Mm-hmm.
Kim writes in from Michigan, subject line, UAW pay. I was a team leader at GM Cadillac Grand River Assembly in 2006 at retirement. I was making $27 per hour. New hires in the plant came in at $14 with no bennies. I doubt the people at the foreign car plants in the USA are getting anything other than $12 to $13 per hour.
That's right.
Now, see, here in West Virginia, we've got a Toyota engine plant down in a little place called Buffalo. And no union. And, yeah, they make $12, $13 bucks an hour. And there's a ceiling. But the funny thing is, if you go and you price new cars, and let's just pick one as a benchmark. Or one style. I mean, we're not going to talk about Cadillac Escalades or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you want a family sedan with 5-passenger capacity. Well, you've got a choice. You could get the Dodge Charger. You could get the Chevrolet Impala. You could get the Toyota Camry.
Mm-hmm.
You could get the Hyundai Sonata. The Honda Accord. And guess what? Every last one of them are $30,000. Now what, and I guess the question that I'm asking here, Reverbo, is what does that mean? If they're all $30,000, and yet, say, GM is paying more in labor costs than Hyundai, even though they are both being assembled in the United States, who's on the downhill looking upside of an unlevel playing field?
I'm all a tingle because somebody's not passing those savings on to me.
Right.
Like you thought they would. Like anybody thought they would. Of course they act like they will.
You know, I don't know how many of those workers like Kim are still out there at GM plants, maybe a Chevy assembly plant, putting together Impalas or Buick LaCrosses. But the Buick comes in higher than the Chevy. The Chevy comes in at 30, and that's its sort of base model price, 28, 27. If you want anything nice, it's 30. If you want the leather seats and a little spoiler on the back, it's 35.
Jesus, a Chevy Impala loaded is 35?
Yeah.
I mean, it must be made out of solid gold.
As compared to the Chevy Impala that probably exists in your memory, damn near. And I don't, again, this is one of those not watching TV things, but it drives me a little bit crazy. Or drove me a little bit crazy, because the first thing is, when you watch this commercial from Chevrolet, because they've got this, it's Chevrolet's 100th anniversary series of ads running out there, and they've got this...
That's the store when you need her.
Yeah. But they've got this ad that says, it shows a man who says, about 20 years ago, I had to sell my beloved Chevrolet Impala. And my sons told me, don't worry, Dad, we'll get it back for you. And then they cut to this video of the kid saying, hey, Dad, look over there. And the sons are adults now. Look over there. And he looks over and goes, my God, that's it. That's my car. And so it's all about how they had gone out and found his old Impala, and they had polished it up and made it nice and everything.
Uh-huh.
And it was,
so
you know.
That would have been, let's see, a 1992 Impala.
Oh, no. No. This is the one that was all rounded, sculpted lines about a 1968.
Oh, that's the one he's thinking about. Oh.
Yeah. And so they've got it back for him, and you're going, oh, that's sweet. Oh, what a warm, fuzzy ad.
Yeah.
And then you're thinking, wait a minute. That ain't just happening a whole lot all over the place. That's a one-off. For starters, how many kids his son's age can afford to go out and find that antique car and buy it for dad? Not many.
Oh, fixing up old cars is just for people that have a lot of discretionary income.
Yeah, because the parts get cut.
I mean, yeah, that's a hobby for rich folks, pretty much.
So, you know, I watched that and I thought, because, you know, they're tapping into something. They're tapping into an America, Reverbo, that, you know, it's not the Leave It to Beaver, mom in the kitchen, dad at the factory, and no people darker than Edgar Winter anywhere in sight thing that the right wingers are so fond of. But they're tapping into a memory of an America that could do things when that America is gone. And I don't, yeah, did you? No, you didn't. The cane wreck on Saturday.
I know about it.
He said, I want to return America to that city on the hill and put that city on the hill back on top of the hill. Kid you not. Which led me...
Wordsmith, that guy.
Oh, well, you know, he's been spinned.
Oh, God. But they all want to do... That's their whole spin. All of them. That was Reagan's spin. These guys want to return us to this some sort of Disneyland fantasy version of the past.
And that's exactly it. It is a fantasy version of the past because it never existed. By the way, more data coming in on the foreign car manufacturers. David in Tennessee noting Mercedes-Benz hourly rates. Mercedes-Benz does worker relations committees that are halfway between old unions and nothing. The Mercedes-Benz employees in Alabama feel like they are in a union because Mercedes-Benz requires they talk to them about their side of the factory world. Once the employee gets off the training program and makes their 30-day probation, the starting rate is $14 an hour. 6 or 7 years on, that's 6 or 7 years on, Reverbo, with a good plus effort, a Mercedes-Benz line guy can crack $20. That means talking in-house training course on his, taking an in-house training course on his own time, but paid and superior for performance on the floor. He says, I don't have any knowledge of any of the other plants. But, they, you know, they work in the same structure. But you're not going to, whatever happens to come out of that process is never going to create the middle class that I knew vaguely as a child growing up.
It's not going to be able to buy a Mercedes on that.
No. I mean, the entry level, you know, I told you about that Impala.
Yeah.
The entry-level Mercedes-Benz C-Class sedan, which doesn't even look like a Mercedes anymore. I mean, it's a terribly unimpressive-looking vehicle. The C-Class, with no bells and whistles whatsoever, is going to be yours for $38,000.
Oh, God.
And that is not with leather seats. That is not with... you know, satellite navigation and the Farfignugan or what, all-weather floor mats. No. So,
Jesus.
But then again, that's manufactured in Germany or Brazil or where the hell ever.
Right. But I wonder if those people even have a clue what their corresponding, you know, employees at the German, you know, factory are making, or how they're making out with the, you know, we're talking about an entire country.
Well, first of all, they have the, you know, the Germans have a hybrid sort of public-private healthcare system. So
labor's got a huge say in politics in Europe. Always always has since the war, right?
The line worker at Mercedes-Benz in Germany has 6 weeks paid vacation per year.
Oh yeah.
That guy working at Mercedes, I don't know what he's going to get in the way of vacation, but the Mercedes, the Toyota engine builder in West Virginia is going to go years before he sees. I mean, he'll have to be there a couple of years before he gets 2 weeks paid. 2 weeks. You know.
Yeah. Well, you and I both know. Right now, I mean, in the age we're in now, I used to live in the South, as you remember. God, you're making $20 an hour in the South. You're a goddamn billionaire anymore.
You're supposed to feel that way. And they try to balance that by virtue of the fact that they will, you know, Alabama, for instance, has the lowest property taxes in the entire United States. And so you also, therefore, have fewer services. The money just, it's like watching gravity work. The money just goes up, 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 up. It just floats upward. More data for you. If you love the idea of the Impala Reverbo, Kim writing in from Michigan, we just paid $42,000 for my Volt. That's with every employee discount GM could give me. My Cadillac before that was $36,000.
That's more than my first house.
Now, and here's something interesting that Kim points out. Do you realize that now most car assembly plants not in the USA require their employees to drive what they build? Interesting, huh?
Very interesting.
So we're going to pay you X, but we're going to get a kickback because you got to drive our car, and we'll give you some discounts. You know, 10% off, just like if you work folding shirts at Saks.
Got a pretty good gig if you can get it over there. I don't know. I remember. I mean, you're talking about Buicks, always a little more expensive than Chevys. Well, Buicks were for dentists, in my opinion. But I can remember we had Chevys until that day. That day, my father brought home that Pontiac. Whew! Now we're somebody's coming up in the world here.
Yeah, same with Oldsmobile. The difference between Plymouth and Chrysler.
Yeah. But boy, if you're Pontiac, you know you're not looking back. You're not. There's no going back to the Chevy.
No, because you.
Well, not in 1965. Now, of course, we're going back to the horse and buggy. So it's all, you know. But no, back then, man, oh man, that Pontiac showed up, and wow, didn't quite have the engine that young Reverbo wished it had.
No, you wanted the four barrel and you wanted the big block V8 and yeah.
Oh yeah, and I didn't, maybe it wasn't exactly the model I would have
And the gas station sign said 19.9, right?
Probably. And a bag of fries was about
a nickel.
The burgers might have been 19.9. Well, you could have actually got a Corvette. You know, you think, Jesus, who can afford a Corvette? What were they, like $4,000 in 1960?
Oh, you know, and when the first Mustang came out, they practically get, you know, we look at the price now and, oh, they're giving them away. God, look at the price of a Volkswagen Beetle in 1971.
Have you seen the pictures of the new Beetle, by the way?
Yes, I have.
They're really, really appealing to the men with this model, and it's all over their ad copy too. You think, what do you think of it?
Oh well, yeah, because their demographic was becoming, the so-called new Beetle was almost exclusively, and this is a term of art. It's not a term of me being a sexist. Almost exclusively a chick car.
Well, it came to the flower days.
Okay, but yeah, they've expanded the nose, and it looks a lot more like, what, Beatles from the early 50s? Much more elongated. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. The jury's out, still out for me, but we'll see if they can sell it to any man.
And they've had that problem before. You know, they built the, they had a, a cabriolet, and that's just it was the Volkswagen Cabriolet, and they it was you know it was a convertible, and they didn't understand why the only people buying it were women, really, and just flummoxed all their marketing people. But now they're putting now Volkswagen's putting all of its hopes on the Passat. And of course, the Passat is manufactured. The Passat that's sold in America is manufactured exclusively in that plant that Senator Corker got built down in Chattanooga. And that thing, well, they say that they intend. Volkswagen says that its goal is to be the number one automobile seller in the entire world by 2017.
I've read that they got a ways to go, but we'll see how they do.
But one thing, you know, one thing that I do admire Volkswagen for is for sticking doggedly by its diesel engine, because that thing that thing's a genius engine. It gets something, you know, its EPA listing is 42 miles a gallon. I know people who have them who tell me it's much closer to 50 on the open road. They're billing that Passat now as having a maximum range on a single tank of fuel of 795 miles.
God, you're getting close to Toyota Prius country if you got an engine like that.
Well, you're past Toyota Prius country, except for the fact that you won't get the insane mileage around town. But the difference is between the Volkswagen and the Prius is the Volkswagen diesel is a 140 horsepower four-cylinder engine that's turbocharged, and it has torque coming out its ears. And so where the Prius will do 0 to 60 in about 11.2 seconds, the Volkswagen Jetta Sportwagon will do 0 to 60 in about 8.
But there's no Passat Sportwagon, Sportwagen.
No, no Sportwagen in the Passat. That's strictly a five-passenger sedan.
Yeah, which is I think a tactical error by them, because a certain woman that you and I both know, who I happen to be very good friends with, was hoping that they would. She was thinking, maybe I'll buy a new car. She was in the car.
The bug got her.
And that was what we were going to do. We were going to get that turbo Passat diesel wagon, and there isn't one.
No. But the Jetta Sportwagon is a nice choice. The frustrating thing with the Passat is that if you want a sunroof, if you want all the bells and whistles, you have to take the automatic transmission. You can only get the manual transmission in a stripped down version.
God, that almost sounds like the way it used to be. Like, if you couldn't really afford the automatic.
Well, but the real stunner, though, is the Jetta. That's a nice, roomy little sedan where you can get into that for, you know, I was telling you about all those $30,000 sedans. The Jetta is the exception to that, because you can get into a turbo diesel Jetta sedan for $24,000. And that's with
it's so bad.
No, and it gets the same mileage as that Passat, with almost the same amount of room. By the way, more data rolling in from David in Tennessee. He says the Mercedes-Benz pay rate compared to almost anything in Alabamistan looks like hitting the lottery.
That's what I was saying. Yeah, I mean, in North Carolina, if you were making more than like $12 an hour, you're a millionaire.
Yeah. He says, no. Alabama money in the Mercedes-Benz plant is not like the hourly rate in Germany. Compared to stocking shelves for Bass Pro bereft of benefits, the Mercedes-Benz folks are cutting a very fat hog as compared to their neighbors. And by the way, Kim, who mentioned that she has the Chevy Volt, she says, between August and November, we got 199 miles per gallon in our Volt.
Good grief.
Well,
it's too expensive. That was they knew. I don't know why they. I don't know what we're not sitting in those production meetings, and I don't know what the hell they were thinking. But they should have known that could have just shaved $10,000 off that damn Volt, then it would have been all over the road. we'd see them everywhere. I don't think I've seen one.
And, you know, I haven't either, but the thinking on it is that, you know, they've got to be out there for a little while to in order to justify ramping up production. And then the price will come down. I don't know if that's going to happen or not. But everybody else is coming along. Nissan's bringing out the Leaf.
There's a lot of competition.
But all of the plug-in, you know, the downside to all of the plug-in electrics is the low side of available miles to, you know, miles to drained battery runs anywhere from 75 to 200. And when you can, if you live in a modern city, you can rack up 200 miles like that. And if you don't have the rapid charging station, it's a 7-hour charge to get back to having a full battery. So those kinks still have to be worked out. But the frustrating thing is that Chevy's working on the Volt. Ford has a couple of hybrids. Chrysler has nothing.
Chrysler's got nothing.
Chrysler's putting bigger Hemis in, although they say the Fiat influence is going to be felt in a couple of more years. And they'll have one of those cute little Fiats with a Chrysler or Dodge badge on it. But you know, I think about Jeep, you know what the Jeep Liberty was? They had that in a diesel configuration for about 2 years, and then they just gave up on it.
Yeah, speaking of Jeep, and it is, you know, that is a shame, because that, it seems like things should be getting smaller and lighter and getting better gas mileage, and I love cars. I've always...
Oh, can you tell I'm a geek?
Cars. I love cars. And so we were, obviously, this woman who shall be remain nameless, all we've been doing is looking at cars. I had to get a car. My Subaru Outback died over the summer, and I had to get a car too. But and so you're looking at cars, and you just can't. You're just obsessed with cars. You just and so I noticed the same thing. You really get a kick out of seeing these companies that just go really the wrong way. Jeep
and
the wrong way.
Yeah, and
Jeep,
Detroit.
Jeep is as big as a goddamn battleship.
Now, on the other hand, you know, you want a diesel engine, by God? Well, sink $45,000 into a Dodge Ram 3/4 ton with that Cummins turbo diesel in it, and you got you some diesel. And that thing has torque to climb a tree. And they sell. They move nicely. And the Ford diesel moves. But, you know, David in Tennessee pointing out, he said, Smokey Unick, engine builder for Big Daddy Don Garlitz in the fall of 1972, said the following. If America would only wake... 1972, Reverbum. If America would only wake up and look at smaller turbocharged diesels, there'd be no fuel crisis in the country. And David points out, Volkswagen knew it then and have stuck to their thinking. Unick once took a small American two-door and put a small turbo diesel in it, did a few tuning tricks, and wrung 60 miles a gallon out of the setup. And America yawned. Well, because we think we have a constitutional right to burn gasoline.
Well, we do, and the spin here for years is that it's always 1965, and everybody lives in California. I think lately, of course, since maybe I don't know the last 5 or 10 years, that's kind of run its course. But yeah, that really was.
But Detroit has had an ugly habit, and I mean no insult to Kim, for instance. Detroit has had an ugly habit of trying as hard as it can to stay away from following the trends of the rest of the world, because they say, well, America just won't buy small cars. And I remember when they were saying that, and Ford grudgingly released the Pinto, and Chevrolet grudgingly released the Vega, and they were both disposable automobiles. I mean, they were. They just were. Meanwhile, you know, American Motors is over there putting out things like, and the Gremlin sold like crazy. Now, it was a little piece of junk too. It was a poor little orphan car with a million different parts from a million different manufacturers.
Vega was a piece of junk.
Yeah. And the Pinto, you know, the Pinto exploded on impact.
Well, remember the Chevy Corvair, GM's answer to the Beetle? Didn't they sell millions of those?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and then we ended up with GTOs and stuff and gigantic cars. Well, that was the beginning of the end for Detroit was the 70s, right? They just never got on the...
Yeah.
That... You should mention about American companies and just America in general, our captains of industry and our leadership here, now, ignoring what the rest of the world is doing and, if not outright, ridiculing them. Funny thing, that sort of is why we don't have universal health care as well, isn't it?
Well, absolutely it is. And if you think back in time, you know, you and your family, you had your Chevy, your Pontiac, but there was always somebody on your block who had a little BMW coupe or who had a Volkswagen Beetle.
Sure.
And those people... Those people were kind of set apart, weren't they?
Kind of, yeah.
Because...
Foreign car people.
Yeah. Yeah. He drives one of them little foreign cars. What kind? I don't know. One of them foreign cars. Now, never mind that dude's little 3 Series BMW could beat your behemoth out of the hole and around the turns. That's one of them little foreign cars. And Detroit never had any interest in wondering, you know, that there. Do you remember a shockwave went through Detroit when that day finally came when the Volkswagen Beetle surpassed the Model T Ford as the number one selling automobile in the world in history. And still, Detroit scratched its head and said, wonder why the hell that is.
What I like is that whenever there's a scratch your head moment with ignorant people, we always use the hillbilly voice.
Well, that's me. I wonder why it is.
I love it. Yeah. Boy, nobody sure as hell want to learn from anybody else. We just
and yet
damn exclusive over here.
Right, and at the same time, remember that those middle class wages of the 70s and 60s supported vibrant communities. And in every community, there was always some guy who did bugs repaired here. And dude was always working. Because those were eminently work-onable cars, you know, it was a horizontally opposed boxer engine. And it wasn't because the cars were breaking down, it was because they were easy to work on and cheap to work on.
Mm-hmm. Well, 2 people could lift the engine up and bring it into the kitchen.
2 people could lift the car up and bring it into the kitchen. Hey, Reverbo, this has been a magnificent conversation, brother.
It has. Yes, you got to take off.
Yeah, it's rolling time.
All right. Well, I'll leave you with 2 words tonight. Haruki Murakami. We must talk about him down the road.
We absolutely have to because I'm way deep into the wind-up bird. I finished Dance, 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 and I can't wait for the next one.
Oh God! So, did you finish Wind Up Bird yet?
No, I haven't gotten there yet. He's down in the well for the second time right now.
Okay. Well, good. I had a feeling you'd enjoy this.
He's magnificent. Reverbo, take care. Make it personal, brother.
Same to you, man. Talk to you soon.
Bye now. And so we find ourselves at the end of Moran Monday, and this feels like it's been a pretty daggum good one. Thank you very kindly for joining in. Remember, tomorrow night, Dr. Bill O'Brien, Prism, West Virginia, and then we'll be back live on Wednesday with Prayer Meeting Wednesday. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go. Thanks, of course, to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Join Coal River Mountain Watch, become a member, and become thereby a part of the solution to the Appalachian apocalypse, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next, only on the Horn.